like to call the committee to order. Good morning, everyone. Thanks for your patience. For those who may not be often a part of this process, I just want to reassure you that while it looks like we're just all sleeping in, we're not. And a lot of work is being done this morning, and we have a lot of work ahead of us today. So we are going to be in recess, and we're going to be caucusing. And we're going to do that for a half hour. So we're going to come back at a quarter to 11. It's now 10:15. We're going to come back in half an hour. The DFL caucus will be in 500 North. And Representative Mack, do you have a room that you want to announce?
We're going 208 East, where we usually.
Okay, so Republicans will be in 208 East. So very good. So members and audience, we are in recess. Thank you, everybody, for your patience this morning, and I'm going to call the committee back to order. We have a pretty brief session now because, as everybody knows, we have to be on the floor at noon. So I'd like to just use this time, if we could, to walk through the author's amendment, which is the A-10 amendment, and it's the amendment to the delete all. So where we are procedure-wise.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. All right, members. So first of all, I need to move the bill, which is so I'm going to move that House File 2402 be re-referred to the floor, to the General Register, and so that puts the bill before the committee, and then I'm going to move for adoption the 0926 amendment, which is the delete all that we've been working on, that everybody's had now for a period of time. And just to get the bill in the order in which we're going to start to discuss it, all those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. The motion prevails. So now the bill before us, the contents of it are this big delete all amendment. And now I have an author's amendment to that. So I'm going to move the A-10 amendment, which is the 12-page amendment that it should be in your packets. And there's also in your packets a summary of the author's amendment, members. But I'm going to go through, and what's in this author's amendment is this is updating our delete all, updating the bill with things, many of which are technical. It's going to remove some of the sections for various reasons that I'll explain, updating some of the language, and of course we're going to have other amendments, including I'm going to have other amendments to update pieces of language that are in here that are mine. But I think the author's amendment, for the most part, should be non-controversial, but I just want to make sure that everybody's comfortable with it and understands what we're doing. So the first thing the author's amendment does is it deletes this Article 1 Children and Family Services bill, which is an Allen bill, and the reason we're deleting that, if you were in committee the other day, you heard Representative Mullery ask why it hadn't gone to his committee, the Early Childhood Committee. And in fact, it should have gone there. So the bill is going to his committee, and that's why we are removing it from this bill at this time. So that's the beginning. So that is all going to Representative Mullery. So that takes out quite a few of the sections in Article 1. Next, let's see. Let's see. Okay, let's see. I guess I can work off of this thing. Then we're going to page 19. And there's in the author's amendment, there's delete section one and insert. So that's my smoke-free foster care bill. That was heard. We had an informational hearing on that before session. This bill was heard in Representative Mullery's committee. Some amendments were made there. This language also incorporates comments that were made in this committee about some things that were unclear about the language. I know Representative Zerwas had a comment about wanting to clean up and make sure that the language said what the intention was. And so we're deleting language that's in here on page 19, so it's deleting section 21, and inserting the language that is in the author's amendment here. So the first place in the author's amendment that there's real language laid out is on page 1 of the author's amendment. So you'll see that. Yes, also importantly, on page 1, line 7, let's see, is that of the amendment? Of the author's. Okay. Page 1, line 7 of the author's amendment refers us to page 8 of the bill, of the delete all, which is now the bill. Yes, okay. So we're deleting, unfortunately, we are deleting Representative Abler's section, which was the Eagle's Nest.
Yes.
And Representative Abler, I didn't get a chance to actually catch up with you, but the reason that we are unfortunately deleting this is because it has a fiscal note.
Madam Chair,
we can't carry that
in
our bill. So, Representative Abler, did you want to say anything?
No, and I would. Is this the author's amendment you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay. It's unfortunate. The only reason it has a cost is because Stearns County has a moratorium on GRH beds. And so letting this group contract directly, it creates a new category of eligible people because the county has made them ineligible. If the same guy would move to Todd County, they could, if you had a bill saying Todd County should give him a bed, it'd be free because that's current law and there's no charge that gets caught up in the forecast. And so I'm negotiating with Stearns County, with whom I'm pretty angry about this. They haven't set up a new GRH bed in 6 years. And St. Cloud, if you have remembered, has a VA place up there and they attract a lot of veterans. And some of those veterans are homeless and at risk of suicide. And so we're still working on this, and I hope that Stearns County might recognize the error of their way on this and actually do the right thing and start to recognize this remarkable, innovative place, which is actually rescuing these veterans from the gaps in the VA system. And so, Madam Chair, you've made the correct decision, which I don't like. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Abler. And I want you to know that it's not because I don't like your bill. Happy to carry it in here, but we can't have anything in the bill that has that carries a cost. And so, you know, I regret that, but I think you know that most of us, or maybe all of us on the committee, would support that language if it was able to be carried in a different bill. So
still working on it, Madam
You know,
Chair.
Good. So very good. And we were all so impressed with your testifiers when they were here that day. So, okay, members, on page 25 of the bill now, we are deleting some language that was in Representative Atkins's pharmacy benefit manager bill because we're replacing it with updated language that I think reflects more of a compromise. So there's compromise language in here. When we heard the bill, it was pretty controversial, I think, but so there's now compromise language, and that language is in the author's amendment. Okay, let's see. Okay, so we're going on now to page 34 of the bill, and when I say the bill, I mean the big stack of paper that's in front of you, the delete all amendment that we adopted. So on page 34 of that, we're now in the pharmacy, in the prescription monitoring program, and this bill went to civil law, and the civil law committee took out some provisions of it, and so we're deleting here. We're updating it with the work that the Civil Law Committee did. We're taking out some sections at the bottom of 34, a section that talked about permissible users of this data in other states, and on page 35, a section that talked about de-identified data being used for research. So we're just simply taking that out of the bill. And then we're also on page 37, we're adding a section. We're deleting, deleting section 11. Oh, okay. We're deleting at the bottom of, lines 19 to 21. Okay. Okay, never mind. That's from a subsequent amendment. We'll make some other changes. Okay, so we're deleting Section 11 of the bill, which is a section relating to Representative Schoen's Narcan legislation. If you recall that very compelling hearing that we had about the opiate overdoses, in a subsequent committee, the Good Samaritan language was removed, but it was put back in the Civil Law Committee. So this is updating the bill to reflect the latest committee changes. So the Civil Law Committee unanimously, I might say, after a very compelling hearing, unanimously put this immunity language back into the bill. So that is in the author's amendment. Okay, there's an additional part of that, which is on page 37, line 12, which added language about that also came from the Civil Law Committee, updating this Representative Schoen's Narcan bill. So that is being added as well. Let's see. It's line. It's page 37, line 12. Okay. So there's a section being added. The language is in your author's amendment here, and it says this subdivision does not apply if the licensed healthcare professional is acting during the course of regular employment and receiving compensation, or expecting to receive compensation. So that was a Civil Law Committee update. Okay. All right, page 40, line 34. There is some language here from Representative Loeffler's DHS sunsets that is being updated. Instead of having these units not expire, they are expiring on just on a date is being inserted there instead of going on forever. So that's what that is doing. Page 68, members, we are now in the bill that I'm carrying that has to do with the Health Professional Services program, the program that monitors licensed the people who are licensed under the health-related licensing boards. And again, we've done some updates on this language after it left this committee, and it's been heard in other places. And so we've made some adjustments here to the language of that. Is that what this is? No. Okay, so this is, at this point, it's just technical language. Right, and members, just an important change that we have made to this, and I'm not sure it's exactly at this point, but when it left this committee, we were moving that program out of the Board of Dentistry and under the Department of Administration, and we have changed that. We're now leaving the program where it is under the Board of Dentistry for the time being. I think this committee heard that the HPSB program is undergoing a strategic planning process. We're leaving them alone to let them do that. We're not trying to make that change now, so we've taken that out of the bill, either right here or we are taking that out. Representative Abler, do you
Madam Chair, are those board BDs generally happy with what you're doing? Or thank you.
Yeah, Right.
All right.
Representative Abler, yeah, this is based on feedback from them. They definitely prefer that. They want to keep it where it is. They don't see any reason to move it right now.
Yeah.
We are making some changes to it, however, just not that change. And we can certainly discuss, and we have discussed some of the changes that we are
making. All right. Well, thank you. That was a good decision to move it back. Thanks.
Right. Thank you, Representative Abler. Our intention here is not to make people unhappy without very good cause.
Does that apply to all of us?
All of you, Representative Grenagan. Okay. Let's see. Where are we here? All right. Page 70. Okay, so you'll see on page 70 that we have new language replacing what is here, and that still is relating to the HPSP program that we were just discussing. So the new language is in the author's amendment. So, and it reflects reflects what I was just mentioning, the move back to the board, not taking it out from under the board. And so that is that's all there for you to read through. Okay. Eight. Okay, that doesn't help me. I need to know what page I'm on here. Okay. Okay, on page 8 of the author's amendment. And we're down to this one. Okay. So we're on page 80 of our bill. And so we are removing on page 80, lines 80.8 to 80.11. We are in the Board of Pharmacies bill, and this whole article, Article 5, is the Board of Pharmacies bill that I'm carrying. And I'm removing here language that on my further examination appeared to me to expand the scope of practice of pharmacists. And so I'm simply removing that language. And I realize that there may be unhappy people, and you know, we've got more time as this moves along if they're unhappy with that. But that was new language that allowed pharmacists to also perform laboratory tests. So I'm taking that out and leaving current law there. Let's see. Okay, now we go to page 94 of our bill. And we're just taking out a line on page, and again, we're still in the Board of Pharmacies bill, which is quite extensive and has an awful lot in it. And so that's why, members, this is has been kind of a work in progress as I've had the opportunity to kind of work through the bill that they initially brought. So we're taking out a line here on page 94 of our bill. On page 94.32, we're taking out that last sentence because that the reference there, subdivision 1A, doesn't relate to anything. It's kind of hanging out there, and so we thought the better part of valor would be to take it out entirely, for at least for the time being. So, okay. Page 96 of our bill. We're deleting some lines here at the bottom of page 96. There's language that is new because what the Board of Pharmacies bill is doing, if you recall, it's doing many things, but one of the things it's doing is updating their disciplinary language for pharmacists. And as I got more down into the weeds on this, I realized that some of what's in here, and actually this was also flagged for me in the Civil Law Committee, that it's pretty intrusive language, and so we're taking that out. So this is basically saying that the board would have access to the medical records of any licensed professional, just open access, and that those medical professionals would have to turn it over upon request. So that's the language I'm taking out. And as with everything else, if the board comes back to me and tells me why I'm wrong, I'm happy to listen. But for now, I was not comfortable with that language and wanted to remove it from the bill that I'm carrying.
So what line number?
Oh, that was on, that's on page 96 of the big amendment. And it's lines 29 to 36. And then the next page as well. Thank you. It spills over onto the next page. So it's that B section, and it goes to the bottom of the subdivision there.
Yep.
So you can all read that now that I flagged it for you, and let me know if you agree or don't agree when you get a chance. Okay. Okay, line 90, page 99, line 17, and here's a place that actually I need to ask staff for help, because when I went through my author's amendment, I frankly wasn't sure what this one was doing and wondered if it was a drafting error. So if the staff could help me on line 8.12 of the author's amendment. Ms. Aves?
Yes.
Ms. Aves, thank you.
Madam Chair, that is a technical amendment because your author's amendment deletes subdivision 2, all of subdivision 2 on investigation. Therefore, the title subdivision 1 and reporting is not needed because there's no need for two subdivisions anymore.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Aves. Very good. Okay. All right. So page 99, as Ms. Aves was just referring to, so we are deleting lines 22 to 31, which is that whole subdivision 2 there. So this one is a section that gives complete liability civil and first from civil and criminal prosecution for any actions of people in relation to their board activity. And I thought that was a little broad. And again, I'm sure the board is going to come back and tell me that they need some kind of immunity, which I'd probably be okay with, but I just thought this was a very, very broad section and wanted to make sure that it didn't move forward with this kind of language. So again, I invite members to give me feedback on that if you so desire. And there's also a minor change on line 99.21, and that change in language comes from the Civil Law Committee and is meant to update actually something that was caught by Representative Holberg. So I'm definitely open and inviting everybody's feedback on all of this. Up to page 125. So on page 125, we are deleting section 21, and that is this section. This was taken out in the Civil Law Committee as well, and this relates to the part of the Board of Pharmacy's bill that is also in Representative Simonson's bill. If you all remember, it has to do with the synthetic cannabinoids and synthetic drugs that he did a lot of work on over the interim. And this was just a section that said that the board could update, could schedule new drugs and then not come back to the legislature. This basically brings it back to the legislature. And so we deleted that section. So this is something Civil Law Committee had strong feelings about. I'm fine with their decision. And members here, of course, can overrule that if they so desire. At this point, page 139. This is the dementia care bill that we heard the other day as part of our walkthrough. That, as you all might recall, was a product of a lot of work to reach consensus. And so there's just an update to that language. So we're deleting the language that is in this bill now. Starting on page 139, deleting section 21, updating it with the new language that is here before you in the author's amendment. And then also section 22, same thing, we're deleting that. Section 23, same thing. So all of that is just being replaced with updated language. Representative Mack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick clarification. So if I'm following this right, the language that we are replacing in your author's amendment into the DE reflects what we talked about the other day when we had the long-term care imperative at the table. I'm just making sure I'm remembering correctly. That's...
Yeah, okay. So I understand. Thank you, Representative Mack. Thanks for the question. Yeah, this isn't my language, but I'm given to understand these are technical changes to what was before the committee. So this is, as far as I'm aware, this is still all completely agreed to consensus language. Okay. And you know, I had made it very clear to the parties to that if they couldn't reach consensus, we would not carry the bill this year. So it better be, in other words.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. No, and I just wanted to clarify that I was remembering, how you explained to the group that was a very tenuous agreement and to kind of keep it as it was. So I was just making sure that what we're looking at is reflective of that conversation we had the other day. So thank you, Madam Chair.
To the best of my knowledge. Thank you, Representative Mack. So I think that takes us through the author's amendment. Are there any other questions from members? I know this is, I've tried my best to make this comprehensible. I know it's really hard to, these author's amendments are always kind of confounding to me with all these, you know, delete section this and add section that. But what I do, and just for those of you who are new to this process, if you have the time and you can kind of take the two things side by side and kind of write the amendments into your copy of the bill, it's helpful. So that's what I've done for myself, and you know, I hope that my desire here is that everybody should feel comfortable with what I'm doing in the author's amendment. There shouldn't be anything that needs debating in that. There might be things people are still unhappy with that we can discuss and further amend as we go along, however. So, questions? All right, not seeing any. So so I would move that we adopt the A10 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. The motion prevails. Okay. Okay. Let's see. So, members, because we only have a few minutes left here, I am.
We're going to vote.
Looking for. What do you say?
No.
Ready to vote on the bill?
I second.
Any discussion?
Okay. All right. Representative Morgan, there you are. Would you like to offer the A5 amendment?
Yes, I believe I would.
I believe I would, Madam Chair. I'll move the A5 amendment.
All right. Representative Morgan moves the A5 amendment. And could you explain to us what that does, Representative Morgan?
Sure. I think it was just last week we heard the Board of Dentistry updates, and this represents some further negotiations between the Board and the Dental Association, dealing primarily with the fine for failure to submit your paperwork and so forth in time. So I think we had a group hug on this, and we're ready to move forward.
All right. Any questions from members? All right. Not seeing any. So all in favor of the A5 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Motion prevails. The A5 is adopted. Okay, members, I'm going to offer the A33 amendment. And while you're looking for that, let me just tell you, it's another like line and page type amendment. You won't know what it is just from looking at it. But This is a further update to the HPSP bill that I was just discussing. And the amendment starts to amend page 68 of the bill. And what it's doing is in our work on the HPSP issue, we had changed some language. Let me just explain that. As we work on HPSP, it affects all or most of the health licensing boards. And the initial issue that was before us was had to do more with the Board of Nursing. And that was why we took up this issue in the first place. But as we began to work through this, we wanted to kind of change everybody's world just because we had a problem in one area. And so we've been listening to the health licensing boards as we go along here. And so this is language that further kind of backs away from some of the changes that we were going to make because they impact the other boards in ways that we didn't understand at the time. So we're talking about these disciplinary hearings that would happen when somebody essentially leaves the HPSP program. We wanted to fill the gap that allowed them to continue practicing. That was one of the issues we heard about, that people could kind of continue practicing. And it took a long time for the health-related licensing board, or for, in this case, the Board of Nursing, to be able to start a process and catch up with them. And in the meantime, they could do significant harm, or they might be able to. So this is language that was tightening up the gap and saying to the boards, you need to move right away when somebody is flunks out, for lack of a better word, of the HPSP program. And so what this is doing is putting back in there the ability for the hearing to be before the board under the Administrative Procedure Act. So we're kind of backing off something that we imposed. We're shortening some timelines here because if under the longer timelines, it impacts some of the other boards. So I hope that is understandable to folks. Are there questions about that? Representative Mack?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just understanding who's been working on, is this making some folks unhappy, which, you know, is maybe an okay thing. I mean, it's maybe the right policy thing. I'm just trying to understand the players in this particular situation and who it affects.
Thank you, Representative Mack. This is language to make, it's to make the rest of the boards less unhappy. Put it that way. Okay. They're happier with this change. Okay. Yes. Other questions? Okay, seeing none. So all in favor of the A33 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. The motion prevails. Okay. Okay, the A36 amendment. And that is also one of mine, and it's going to the back to the prescription monitoring program. And I must tell you, members, I've had the most interesting trip with this bill. It's the A36. Is that here? Yeah. Here, I've got it. Okay. And as this has gone through different committees, even this morning when I had the some of the GovOps provisions in front of the GovOps committee, some of the same questions came up, and I have assured members at every stop that this prescription monitoring program, which is a program that, as you know, collects extremely sensitive data on individuals. So any of you who go to the physician or to the advanced practice nurse or whoever your practitioner is, and they prescribe for you an opiate, and you go to the pharmacy and get your prescription, your data is being put into a database, and that is a database that's being used and is there to try to help stem the very huge problem of opiate overuse and doctor shopping. But because of the sensitivity of this, we want to be very careful that we keep control of how the data is used, how long it's kept, who gets to use it, and so on. And so the board had asked in the bill that I'm carrying, it really came from the program. It's the program's bill. I think in the Senate, it's being carried pretty much as the board had asked for it. But I have been on a process of really whittling back what the board asked for. And I know I said that when the bill was before this committee, but in the subsequent committees, some of the things have even reached more scrutiny. And I want to make sure that as it leaves our committee, that it's a narrow program, that we really, because it may change in conference. I don't know where that will go. But what I'm doing with this amendment is cutting down the amount of time that the board can keep the data that they collect. Right now, it's in their bill, it's a year of identified data that they use to see if people are doctor shopping, and then it was a total of 5 years with it being de-identified for the last four. And then they had proposed to use it for various other purposes. I'm cutting that back with this amendment, saying that they can only keep it 3 years, two of which would be de-identified, and then they actually have to destroy it at the end of the three-year period. So that's the intent of this, is to even further narrow the availability of this data. And again, we can continue to talk about this, but I've heard, you know, bipartisanly in all these different committees, everybody has a concern. I think the Senate has a different way of looking at these issues, but I know that we in the House bipartisanly are very concerned about the use and abuse of people's personal data. And so, you know, of course, with the appropriate balance, that it be available to be used for very important issues. But so that's what I'm doing with this. Are there questions about this, members? Don't see any. So then all those in favor of the A36 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. The motion prevails. The A27, Representative Abler.
Madam Chair, thanks. I'd like to move A27. And this was, this must just be explanatory, because we've, this, the advocates were working on this, and I think this is an agreement with the department about how they want to say it. This wasn't controversial, and it's without cost.
Okay, thank you, Representative Abler. And so this related...
It defines durable medical goods and what how they're categorized and so on.
Okay, thank you, Representative Abler. So members, this is a bill that we heard, if you remember, we had way back in January, I think, probably pre-session. And it was, there have been issues for this industry for a while, just simply about when how their costs are classified is really what it comes down to. And
right.
Representative Abler has been working on this. And so this is a compromise that's been reached,
right.
Correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So the A27, if everybody's found it. I know it's confusing with all the paper. Are there other questions about this? All right. If not, all those in favor of the A27, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, no. The motion prevails.
Madam Chair, the A1 will take about 30 seconds.
Okay. Let's see. Okay. Well, Representative Abler, go ahead, move the A1. I don't think you're right about how long it'll take, but
oh.
Go ahead.
Well, whatever. I have a witness, Madam Chair. If I'd like to move the A1, it was so disinteresting that civil law didn't want to hear it. The chiropractic board was trying to decide how to protect patient confidentiality. They made up a version in line 112 to 14 saying about consent or not, and it's been problematic about what they can redact and all. So they decided just to go existing law, which will apparently solve problems they have about getting data. And so Mr. Lesh thought that was a great idea. So,
Okay, well...
And Ms. Dr. Spicer is here if you want to actually hear more background.
Actually, Representative Abler, what I'd like to do is see if Ms. Aves can... I know I didn't clue her that I would be asking, but I'd like to see if she can describe the impact of this amendment, because this isn't something that I think members are all that familiar with. But does everybody have the amendment in their hand now, the A1? Okay. Ms. Aves, can you do that for us? Tell us what this is doing.
Madam Chair, I can try. What this does is strike language requiring the Board of a chiropractor to redact identifying patient information in a file before it's released to the Board of Chiropractic while the Board is doing an investigation. The new language requires the Board to maintain the confidentiality of the patient records it receives in accordance with applicable state and federal laws. So what this does would be by striking the language prohibiting release without redaction, it would allow practitioners to release information without redacting patient information, which may be contradictory to what state law currently requires.
Okay, and Ms. Aves, so what does state law currently require?
State law currently provides that patient records can not be released except for, I believe there are 5 exclusions, emergency, health threat to the Commissioner of Health under certain circumstances, but I didn't see anything that allowed release without redaction under state law for an investigation. If that notice is included in the privacy notice from a provider, you know, the general privacy notice we receive from all our providers, it will often say, you know, your records may be released pursuant to an investigation by a health licensing board, something like that. Under those circumstances, it can be released because the patient has had notice. If there is no such notice available to the patient, then it's my understanding from looking at state law, a provider would be prohibited from releasing information.
Okay, and this would make an exception to that?
It would. And just for the committee's information, there are 5 other health boards that currently have identical information in their statute.
Identical to what this amendment is proposing?
No, identical to the language. The language that's being stricken is included in 5 other health board statutes.
Okay, so this would create something that's different than what the other boards are doing.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right. Well, we can, I guess, Representative Abler, I guess if you feel like you need more help to explain the amendment, we could have the witness. I'm a little reluctant because I don't want us to take testimony on all these amendments if we don't have to. But
well, thank you, Madam Chair. But maybe a 30-second explanation,
okay.
And then the committee can do what it wants.
Okay.
The board brought this to me. It's a concern that some of the data that they get becomes gibberish and it's all redacted. And that's, he'll tell you, Dr. Spicer can tell you, this is their issue, not mine. I'm just carrying it on behalf of the board.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I will try to be very brief. My name is Dr. Larry Spicer. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Chiropractic Examiners. This original language was established for the purposes of complying with the HIPAA regulations regarding confidentiality of patient records. However, HIPAA has exemptions in there for law enforcement and for regulatory agencies. So this really does not serve that purpose. And when doctors send records to the boards that are redacted, it interferes with the ability of the board to actually investigate complaints that are lobbied against that particular doctor. And so they're using these to sort of block out that information and interfere with those investigations. We believe that simply striking that language and inserting the language that we will maintain the confidentiality of those records in accordance with state and federal laws really serves everybody's purpose because that confidentiality is maintained.
So, Dr. Spicer, does the does the practitioner have to give the patient a notice, as Ms. Aves was saying, initially when they come there, saying that your data may be released if there's a complaint?
Yes, and all of them do give that as a standard part of their intake forms with the patient intake information.
And Dr. Spicer, does the law require that, or is they just do it?
I don't know the answer to that, Madam Chair.
Okay, other members have questions about this? Representative Albright?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm just curious, you mentioned HIPAA provisions. And as I understand, HIPAA is a federal statute.
That is correct.
And so, Madam Chair, my question is, when we're dealing with state statute versus federal statute under HIPAA, what would supersede the other? Which governs one? In this case, would federal statute supersede the state statute we're talking about?
Well, Representative Albright, I think maybe Ms. Aves would be the one to ask that question of. Ms. Aves?
Madam Chair, Representative Albright, in this case, state law is more restrictive than the HIPAA law regarding patient confidentiality of records in this situation, so I would have to say that state law would prevail.
There's your answer.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you, Dr. Spicer. So, Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, if there's an issue here, I would really ask that the Board of Chiropractic work with the other four or five health licensing boards and come back with a solution for all of them, because a patient should be kind of treated the same no matter what licensed practitioner they're dealing with. And I think it's confusing if we have different approaches for different licenses. So it just feels like this is one that maybe needs a little more work. It might be a good idea. I don't know. But I just think if we could kind of get all the boards on handling records the same, that would be helpful.
Okay. I'm not seeing any other questions, but members, before we vote on this, I just want to say that I also have some concerns about this, because basically you're letting the board get unredacted patient records that I kind of feel like they belong to the patient, and this is where the practitioner is in some trouble and wants to use the patient's records or is being asked to supply the records. And especially without a requirement in law that patients be advised of that up front, I'm very uncomfortable doing this. I think Representative Loeffler, I think, made a good point. Representative Mullery?
Well, Madam Chair, this is certainly not an easy, simple amendment to me. and I don't know where Representative Abler disappeared to, because
he's right there.
It certainly doesn't, I don't know his view of simple. I'm uncomfortable with doing this. As Representative Loeffler said, shouldn't these be similar to the other boards? But also, it seems like something we should have more testimony and let different sides come in on. I don't know. I just have a lot
Madam
of
Chair.
Problems.
Representative Abler.
I apologize. I showed it to Ms. Lesh. She said that seems fine to me. You offered to put in your author's amendment. This says technical. And it looks like it's not technical. I talked to Dr. Spicer. I think he's going to go back to his workshop with his board members and come back with an idea next year. So I'd like to withdraw it, if I may. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Abler. The A1 is withdrawn. We can do it. So. Okay. So, members, I think we can probably do one more quick one here, and then we will recess. And
like a 30 second.
One more quick one like that, and we are all lost. Representative Huntley, would you like to do the A8?
I would move the A8 amendment, and what this does is delay what's called the electronic drug prior authorization standardization, which is something I put into law.
And
Representative Huntley, maybe you should repeat that, because I don't think.
Okay, relates to was going to mandate that if a health plan required prior authorization from the health plan before a prescription could be issued, then we were going to do this electronically. So they could just, the hospital could just punch it in and send it off to the health plan. The health plan could then send it back saying, yes, you can go ahead and order that prescription. The trouble is, and it has nothing to do with this, but some of you know, have heard about something called ICD-10, which is a huge, huge change in the federal regulation of medical care in terms of electronic records. And just as two examples, in this new law, which has to go in on October 1st, the diagnostic codes that the federal government has set up is going from 15,000 to 60,000 different codes. And for hospital DRGs, it's going from 500 DRGs to 4,000 DRGs, which means that all the health plans, hospitals, clinics are going to have to reprogram everything by October 1st. And I don't think they're going to have time to do this other programming. So all I'm doing is delaying the implementation of this other thing for 2 years.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Puntley. Any questions? Oh, okay. Seeing no questions, all those in favor of the A8, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Motion prevails. All right. Members, I'm going to let you run over the floor. Maybe you can even grab something to eat on the way for the few minutes. Representative Matt? Yeah, we have the room, so members, you can leave all your papers here, and unless you want to read them through on the floor, I know I'll be seeing a bunch of you with your big fiddle over there, but we are going to be in recess to the call of the chair. Listen for amendment for an announcement on the floor. We're in recess. Order. I know a lot of folks aren't here, but I think we could take up some things that we expect should be relatively non-controversial. While some members still haven't made it back, but Representative Morgan, do you want to take up the A-29?
I'd be happy to do that, Madam Chair.
All right, so Representative Morgan is moving the A-29 amendment.
Madam Chair, the A-29 amendment is Department of Public Safety bill carried by Representative Halverson. It passed out of Public Safety Committee, I believe it was last week. It requires that hospitals give notice about victim rights and available resources to folks seeking medical services who report a sexual assault. And it requires the Commissioner of Public Safety to meet with advocates and healthcare professionals to develop the notice and make sure that the notice is appropriate. So,
all right, Representative Morgan, and I, can we be really clear that there's no cost to this? Is that and is there any opposition to it that you're aware of?
I am not aware of any opposition to it. Representative Halverson had the bill. She said there was no opposition. There was somebody from the Department of Public Safety here earlier, but I think she overestimated our recess time. But if there are specific questions, I'm sure she'll be back. But it did pass out of Public Safety unanimously.
Okay, and I'm told by Mr. Bergeron that it was scored by MMB as having no cost.
Great.
And I also was under the understanding that the Hospital Association was not opposed to it, which would be the other party that would be impacted by this. We're members around the A-29.
And that's what I understand, Ms. Madam Chair.
And okay, which is, again, just the Notice of Rights to Sexual Assault Victims, a Halverson bill that's being offered. Here's an amendment. I think it's non-controversial. We understand it has no cost. Any questions from members?
Yes.
All right. All those in favor of the A-29, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Morgan.
Thank you.
All right. All right. Representative Moran, would you like to offer the A-18?
Yes, I would, Madam Chair. The A-18 amendment deletes Section 3, and on page 4, Section 3, it also deletes page 8, Section 7. Both sections deals with the drug screening of, within that section. which is also my bill. Okay, so Representative Moran is moving to delete the parts of the bill that related to her MFIP drug testing language. And that is, as she said, page 4, section 3, page 8, section 7. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair?
Representative Abler.
She's taken the whole bill out, is that? Okay, thank you.
Representative Moran?
Yes.
Okay, that's what she's doing, Representative Abler.
Is that going to go separate, or is that just
no, I'm just removing it. It's not going to be a separate bill or anything.
All right, thank you.
Yeah. Okay, any other discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Motion prevails. And members, if you're following along with all of this, you might want to take a moment to mark your actual bill that's in front of you just to remind yourself so that we don't end up going over a language or trying to amend language that's been removed.
Madam Chair?
Representative Grunhagen.
Yeah, I had Amendment A21. I wanted to withdraw that.
All right. Okay. Representative Grunhagen withdraws the A21 amendment. Okay. How about the A2 amendment, Representative Benson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill was brought to my attention by constituents in my district who are acupuncturists, and again, we have an issue here of conflict between groups over a scope of practice, and this particular amendment was designed to bring Minnesota's code in line with federal regulations, which were passed in 1996. The physical therapists and the acupuncturists are in conflict here. This amendment has come quite late, and like so many of these issues, when you have various practitioners still in conflict, I made it clear to both sides that I was interested in allowing the public and this the committee to understand that we have another issue of scope of practice on the use of acupuncture, and each side now has agreed that they will get together and to discuss this further on their own, and I do think, like many of these issues, it's important that some movement take place, and I'm not here to divine which side is more at fault or the good players on this, but it is an issue of significance. We're you know, dealing with people's employment and their profession and all those kinds of things. Madam Chair, I hope those who will be serving on this committee next session will keep in mind that this issue is there and superintend these two groups to make sure that they do get together and come to some understanding. So with that, Madam Chair, unless there are questions for our members. Oh, Representative Abrams.
Representative Abler.
Abler, excuse me. Right. Yeah. Abrams is a good friend of mine, as you know, yeah. My former state representative. Sorry.
Yeah.
Representative Abler.
All right, Representative Abler.
I do have kind of a judge-like air about me, I guess. So
you do.
So, and I appreciate the attention to this, but there is a problem, and I hope members understand a bit about that, and I know it's hard to take up a whole new topic of this nature. Question is, can a physical therapist break the skin with a therapeutic device? And that's the question, and a lot of us would think no. And they can do EMGs, but that's different than a therapeutic effort. I think a good deal of the... Oh, Representative Schoen's not back yet. But a big discussion about the CRNA thing is, where can you do this safely, and what's the side effects, what's your training, what are you really doing? And so I think this is something that really should be discussed, and I think the benefit of having this come forward today is that both sides have now agreed to spend some time working on this in the interim. And I think that the the pressure of the legislature to coerce people to do that is very productive. And I agree. You know, I could easily vote for this. I know this topic real well, but I don't think other members do. And it does need to be defined, and both sides need to come to the table and really decide. And then this legislature needs to decide about this piercing the skin thing. And, you know, chiropractors, there was a big debate in the 70s about can we draw blood or not. And that was extremely controversial and decided that they, in fact, could. And then with training, we can do acupuncture. And that's all the piercing we do. So that these things come to us, and I, as Representative Benson said, I look forward to this group coming to a good conclusion about this next year. So, and I think withdrawing it is the correct action for today.
Thank you, ma'am. So I do withdraw the A2 amendment.
All right. Thank you, Representative Benson. Thank you, Representative Abler. So the A2 is withdrawn.
Getting along so well with it.
Okay. How about we take this one? Okay. The A4. Can we take the A4? Is that, did Abler just...
I don't know if I have an A4. We did the A8.
Sorry, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the A4.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Representative Abler moves the A4 amendment. Does everybody have it? It's a bigger amendment.
This is a 245D thing, is it?
All right. Representative Abler, I think this one might take a little extra.
I think I need to phone it. Is
my friend here. Are the people that wanted this here that...
Representative Abler.
This is complicated, but it's worked out with the department. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, this is compromise language?
Well, this is all worked out. The department agrees with this. The 245D thing got done. Is anybody in the audience here capable of discussing this? And I think that if... I don't know where they all, I think they thought we were having lunch today, but this is a meaty enough amendment, Madam Chair, that if
maybe
you...
Maybe we should lay this...
Oh, okay. I see hands in the audience, Madam Chair.
Okay,
Representative
Abler, if need be, we could set this aside until the parties are all present.
Well, here's some parties that I'll be happy to talk about. So.
Okay, and in the meantime, Representative Mullery wanted to speak. Representative Mullery?
Is this foster care of people under 18? No. Is it disabled?
This is adult foster care, Representative Mullery.
So, Madam Chair, I'll move the A4 then.
All right. So the A4 has been moved. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
My name is Catherine Finlayson. I'm with the Department of Human Services Licensing Division.
And Laura Plummer-Zarast for the Department of Human Services Licensing Division. And I don't, like Representative Abler said, I don't see ARM in the audience, but this is compromise language in working with ARM.
Okay, so thank you. So, members, if you recall from last session, there was a very large issue about some changes that we have to make with rates that are paid to these providers of disability services. The changes were driven by changes coming from the federal government that we had to make the rates uniform across the state, and so there was a big... Oh, right. This is... Okay, I'm sorry. I guess I'm a little off here, I'm being told. This is only the licensing piece, not the rates. But I understand that this is related to that, and this was some additional conversations that were being had around this whole topic. And
Madam Chair.
Representative Abel.
Perhaps the department could just kind of go through the highlights. So a lot of people actually can't be here for this wonderful day, but they could actually listen at home. Instead of saying this is a good thing that we've all agreed to, then the people could actually know what the good thing was that people have agreed to. And the department can be succinct, but I think with the highlights it would be productive. Just
Thank you, Representative Abler. I think that's an excellent idea because we have in front of us 17 pages of language, and so I think it would be... certainly, and we also want to be assured that there's no cost to this provision as well. So if you can you just give us just a very few minutes about what this is doing, that'd be great.
Yeah, it resolves some issues.
And I'm sorry, your name again?
Catherine Finlayson.
Thank you.
First, I would say there are no costs related to this. And it resolves some issues around when to use, when and how to use medical monitoring equipment that is used to for life-sustaining purposes or that could result in a life-threatening event if the equipment wasn't used correctly. So we've come to agreement on that language. It also, in various places, clarifies timelines, adding calendar days to provisions to identify where we had said 15 days, it now says 15 calendar days. In the incident response section on page 5, you'll see it adds language to say they have to report deaths and serious injuries. And it clarifies service planning requirements. It carves out certain types of what we designate the services in two layers, basic services, which is primarily supervision and assistance, and intensive services, which is supervision and assistance with training components or skill building components. And there's a couple of those intensive services that are intermittent. They're a couple hours a week, and so some of the training requirements for staff for those intensive services were moved to reflect the basic service requirements, which are fewer hours of training. ARM worked with the department on this language, and we agree. We've come to agreement on it.
Okay. Any other questions from members? Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And did we hear this as a separate bill this session? I don't believe so. And
Representative Loeffler, we did not.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have some real concerns because some of the language that's being changed here. Last year we heard a lot from family members of people who are served in these agencies, and they had a very different interpretation of the needs for training, and I would like to know whether or not you were involved, parents or other advocacy groups. You've mentioned the providers, but to what degree have they been involved in the development of this?
Ms. Binlayson.
Madam Chair and Representative Loeffler, we did meet, have meetings with parents around this language, but ARM primarily reached out and worked with the parents involved in this. I wish they were here to be able to describe their meetings and discussions with them, but from my understanding, ARM did work with the parent who had a particular concern in this area, and the parent was in agreement with these changes.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm just thinking of the testimony we heard last year about the lack of training that we're hired because we're paying such low wages. We're getting people who may not have the skills to even do the basics. And we heard about a parent who's only through happenstance started to understand that they were her son and his roommates were basically living off of cheese and crackers, even though there was other food there, because some of the people who had been hired didn't know how to cook. They didn't know how to deal with a lot of the personal care things that people were responsible for. And that's when we put in the 30 hours of orientation, and this takes it down to 10. And I think that's a major change from the policy that we adopted with broad input last year. So I'm a little concerned about taking what would be perceived, by, I think, by many family members whose person that they really care about is dependent on their care, for us to adopt a major change without a public notice, without a hearing. And I know some of them have been active this year and have never mentioned this to me. The other thing I have a question about is we have a summary that says that it repeals the statute relating to the requirement to develop, document, and implement an abuse prevention plan. And could you address that?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative. In regard to the abuse prevention plan, that was redundant language. The same requirement is in the Human Services Licensing Act under Section 245A.65. which requires all DHS licensed providers to develop an individual abuse prevention plan and a program abuse prevention plan. So it's removing a duplicative requirement.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will just say that I'm very uncomfortable with this never having been introduced as a bill, having had a public hearing with notice when it changes provisions that we wrestled with last year and put into law.
Okay, well, members, you know, I really was not that familiar with this either. It came in late as kind of one of these, everybody's on board, and it's not controversial. I don't know, Representative Abler, maybe we should withdraw this temporarily and see if we can get some more discussion around it, see if ARM could be here, and I don't want to, you know, take a vote on it when there's controversy around it when they're not even here.
So sure, I did send a text to Mr. Nelson, and so I think that would be helpful, and I think upon review, people will discover it's probably satisfactory, but I think that's reasonable. I'll withdraw it temporarily, Madam Chair.
All right, that would be great, and we, you know, we'll be on the floor, and maybe if Representative Loeffler can talk with some other parties about it or talk with the department or...
Madam Chair, the room is almost empty of some of the people that do these kinds of deals, but I think it's the responsibility of the groups to come to an agreement to let members who they know are tune into these things, like Representative Loeffler, to actually know about the agreement.
Yes, thank you.
That'd be lobbying 101, but just a thought, Madam.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Abler. Okay, so the A4 is temporarily withdrawn.
Alrighty.
Okay. Oh, let's see. What have we got here? Representative Mullery, would you want to do the A23?
Yes.
A23.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This only took about 3 minutes in our committee. Right now, there's just a little bit of confusion on when children are considered preschooler or school age. And the language is kind of archaic. It says it's preschooler is up to 4 months prior to the first day a child is eligible to attend kindergarten in the fall. That affects how many kids can be handled in a family daycare where you have different groups and different ages of people. And it's really hard for them to know when a child is even going to be eligible. We've talked to the department. They're fine with this change. And as I say, there wasn't any discussion in my committee at all.
Okay, so thank you, Representative Mullery. So this is a bill that went through Representative Mullery's committee.
Yes.
Are there questions, Representative Francis?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would agree with Representative Mullery on this. I don't know why AFSCME was with you, but that worries me. But besides that issue, providers have been given correction orders because figuring out the math sometimes and just spaces them when that 4 year, sometimes a school ager could be considered school age at the age of 4, depending on when they're eligible to go to school. So this is going to cut down on some correction orders as well. So I appreciate the
And Madam
gesture.
Chair, without
good.
This,
Representative Mullery.
Without this, there's some, even if they're really good at math and all that, there's some kids for whatever reason, they're maybe a disability or whatever, have a different computation. So if everybody's just age 5, everybody can know what's going on.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you, members. Are there other questions or comments about this amendment? Okay, so Representative Mullery has moved the A23. Seeing no further discussion on it, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 All opposed, no. The motion prevails. Okay, members, the 0968 amendment. I don't know if I know whose that is. Do I have that? Okay, so who's Oh, Representative Allen, is that yours? The 0968 Direction to Commissioner Strategies to Address Chronic Conditions. Okay. Madam Chair, that is correct. Does everybody have the amendment? No. It's in your green sleeve. It's in the sleeve, and I think mine was on top of the packet.
Oh.
Okay, Representative Allen. Representative Allen moves. Are you going to move the amendment, Representative Allen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay. Move
the A140968 amendment. This amendment simply directs the department to incorporate in its planning efforts and design of the state Medicaid plan strategies and activities that will focus on people whose chronic health conditions are complicated by socioeconomic factors.
Okay. Any questions? Representative Mack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Allen, I don't know if this was something that we've heard or discussed before, but do you know, or is there someone from the department, would this cost any money or require FDs? I guess it doesn't seem like necessarily an easy undertaking. Maybe it's not extremely complicated, but I guess if you could just speak to what might be involved and if this is going to cost anything.
Representative Allen.
Madam Chair, Representative, it's my understanding that it will not cost anything and that the department has no objection, and if not, I believe they're in agreement. They don't see this as a problem to do this.
Representative Mayor?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And do we know, is this something other states are trying to do in association with the Affordable Care Act, or is this, or I guess maybe where this is coming from, maybe this is something that you just have a desire for, if this is coming from a group, or...
Representative Allen?
Madam Chair, Representative, this is brought to me by Hennepin County Medical Center, and this is already being efforts in home health. What is it? Sorry, I have it right here somewhere.
Representative
there,
Allen?
There is a David Godfrey from Hennepin County Medical Center here.
I was just going to say there's a testifier who looks like he wants to answer some questions about this. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is David Godfrey from representing the Hennepin County Medical Center. What this amendment does is to ask or directs the Department of Human Services to incorporate strategies and activities that address issues of health disparities in the health home model. The health home model is different than the health care home model that we currently have in Minnesota. The health care home model coordinates primary care with other types of health care like specialty or long-term care. What the health home model does is on top of that coordination and coordinates primary care with social services and community supports. And so this project, DHS has been working on developing a model for a year or two. And they expect to, and I'll let them speak for themselves if they'd like, but my understanding is that they expect to be bringing a model to CMS and to the legislature sometime in the near future. And so that's a brief description of what this does.
Okay, Representative Mack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so if I'm trying to, we have this in front of us, but you said the Department of Human Services is already creating a model that they will then bring to the legislature. So I'm trying to figure out, they've already done some of it. You're saying they're going to come back to the legislature. So where does this fit in? Why do we need to do this if it sounds like the work is already halfway down the road?
Well, because, Madam Chair, Representative, the model itself is a statewide model, and it does have some components of in the original legislation that was passed to create this in 2010. It does have some components around implementing activities and services which would benefit ending health disparities. What it doesn't have is an explicit direction that those types of activities should be incorporated in the design of the model.
Representative Mack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so, Mr. Godfrey, are we looking then at, I'm looking in terms of, in your testimony you said, coordinate primary care with social workers and things of that nature to get some of these issues. Are we looking then at mandates on providers in terms of telling primary care physicians if you have somebody in the MA population or something like that and trying to address this of a certain race or ethnicity or age, that we're telling primary care
physicians what they need to do in that circumstance. I'm just trying to get a handle on how the rubber hits the road with what this is telling us.
Madam Chair, Representative Mack, my understanding is that participation in a health home is not mandatory, or will not be mandatory. I would defer to, again, to the department on that. And so if one, this is just saying simply, focus on strategies that incorporate efforts to end diversity as something that can be done through the health home, and health homes that would like to have that sort of focus.
Okay, members, I have two other members who have questions, but also Dr. Golden from the department is here, who could also maybe come down and be available so we can get this cleared up. So I have Loeffler and then Lohmer. I've got the two L's. The three.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and this is the first I've seen of it, but I would, well, Mr. Godfrey might have some specific ideas. Actually, what I see in the language is very general, and it just says that in developing the state plan, the state should, consider strategies and activities that can address these kind of issues. And on Thursday night, I think it was, or Wednesday night, I guess it was, we were suddenly discussing the Department of Human Services plan to rebid statewide all of our managed care contracts. And if you recall that language, which is in the bill before us, it actually has each of the plans in their submission discuss how they are coordinating medical care with behavioral care and services and stuff. So I think this is somewhat consistent with what at least the department presented in that. Where they go with it in modifying the plan, I think it leaves it pretty open, but Mr. Golden could address that.
All right. Welcome to the committee. Dr. Golden, please introduce yourself.
Madam Chair and committee members, for the record, Jim Golden, the Medicaid Director with the Department of Human Services. We have been working with Hennepin County on this issue. You know, really what we're looking to strive for is to make sure that the care delivery that we have, regardless of the exact model, is really meeting the needs of our clients. And we really do want to see care coordination across all the settings of care, whether it would be medical care, behavioral health, or working with our counties on social services and other programs that are supporting our clients. I think from our perspective, what this is asking us to do are to consider those factors that might otherwise impact the challenges that face some of our clients, whether it would be language, race, ethnicity, or some of the other ones that may not even be listed here. I think we'd certainly want to work with Hennepin and others who might view some of these as barriers to make sure that whatever we're designing meets the needs of our clients. So we don't have any concerns with this language.
All right. Representative Lohmer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I'm just feeling really uncomfortable with this discussion, and that we haven't had a bill in front of us. We haven't been able to actually have a hearing, and just to be doing this like this, it just makes me really uncomfortable, and I would like to ask that we would have a hearing on this instead of voting it as an amendment.
Okay. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to speak in favor of the amendment. It's interesting that this week I had conversations with public health professionals from my county, as well as University of Minnesota Extension people, and much of our conversation was built right around these sorts of issues, that the holistic approach to help specifically young mothers provide for appropriate nutrition for their children and that sort of thing. This makes good sense, and I think it'll save. It will lead to better health, and will eventually save the state money. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Mack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I would echo what Representative Lohmer says. Only I'm just trying to get my head around. I know there's a lot of different ways in the state that we deal with health disparities and trying to get at this, and you know, through healthcare homes. And I understand to be in a health home, it's voluntary, but you know, with the Affordable Care Act, I feel like a lot of these things are kind of built into that in terms of how we start to address some of these issues. And we're looking at a new mandate for the commissioner and for the department here. And it's not a lot of language, so on its face, it doesn't seem all that complicated. But I'm not comfortable supporting it today without a better understanding and hearing from more folks on this. So I guess that's just where I'm coming from on this. It doesn't seem like a great thing to do an amendment form at that without more input.
All right, let me just ask this of Mr. Golden. Do you need this language, or can you do this anyway?
Madam Chair, committee members, I don't believe we need this language to be able to do this. I think it's something that we would want to do anyway. If the legislature wants to direct us to do this via this language, again, as I say, I hope it's something that we would certainly do to best serve our clients with or without the language.
Representative Allen?
I would say that it's needed. This is consistent with the recent Advancing Health Equity in Minnesota, where they report from the Commissioner of Health, that we basically, when we're, we rely much on evidence-based practices, and in when we do the research, often, or always, I think, racial and ethnic populations are historically underrepresented, and not they're not participating in that in those studies. So this would we talk about health equity and health equity in all policies, and so this is a move in that direction to make sure that we're addressing health disparities and social and economic factors in designing these health plans that are going to be serving the populations that have chronic issues.
Okay. All right. Members, I'd like to vote on this. We just found out that we need to be back on the floor in about 15 minutes, so I'd like to Representative Mullery?
Really quick. I agree that I agree with Representative Allen. I work a lot with minority communities, and I've seen the Department of Human Services really need something like this to get it done.
Okay, so members, we're going to vote on this amendment. So are there not seeing any other questions? And then after we vote on this amendment, I think we're going to recess again and go to the floor. So any other discussion? All right, seeing none, all those in favor of the A140968 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no.
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 The motion prevails. Okay, and members, we are in recess.
I feel better.
All right, members, thanks to those of you who scooted right back here from the floor. Appreciate that. As you know, we've still got a lot of work to do tonight, and I hope that we can get it done so that we don't have to go into the wee hours. I know everybody's tired. It's been a long week, and we want to get some kind of a start on our weekend before it's over, one hopes.
Madam Chair.
Yeah, Representative.
Just one thing. I've still been getting some messages, and I know we talked behind the scenes. There's a lot of people that are still questioning the advanced practice registered nurse portion of the bill, and I think it's important to make it people aware that we're not going to be taking that up tonight, and that we've had discussions about that we're going to do something with that on Tuesday on its own, and I think that we should make that reflection noted to folks that are here.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Schoen. I think that's a good point. I knew that the word spread pretty quickly among the insiders here in the room, but that doesn't mean that everybody does know that although we have in our packet quite a pile of amendments relating to the APRN issue, that we have an agreement that we're not taking them up today and that we're going to take up the bill next week and use it as a vehicle to move it to the floor, which just basically means that it will have met deadlines and that it can be used to reflect whatever compromise is reached on the issue so that people can continue to work toward compromise language. And I think as well that with that very complicated issue that it'll be much easier for us to work on it after we get this omnibus bill issue out of the way. And so I think a lot of people kind of are happy with that, at least for the time being anyway.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for bringing that up, Representative Schoen. So that does, as members will know, that will decrease our pile of amendments quite a bit, even though we're getting new ones. Okay, so let's see which one is it. So I think we could take up the A15, which is Representative Abler, I think.
Oh, sorry, I'm skipping around. I'll move the A15, whatever that one is. Oh.
Madam Chair, in last year's omnibus over in the Capitol, we discussed surety bonds at length, and it was probably my fondest topic of the entire and the entire omnibus time. And here it is again. And so it's nice that all members can share in this topic, because without surety bonds, you wouldn't have any. Maybe Ms. Pinelli can explain the technical nature of this, and so members can dig in deeper on their own if they would like over the weekend.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Abler. Ms. Pugnelli, do you want to tell us what the amendment is doing? And Representative Abler, I'm not sure if you actually formally moved it, but Representative
Abler. Oh, I think we moved the A15.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair and members, this is just adding a sentence to, I believe it's a section related to durable medical equipment and surety bonds related to those providers, just saying that this paragraph doesn't apply to them if they already maintain a surety bond that meets the specifications of another surety bond requirement in Chapter 256B.
Okay, and Ms. Pugnelli, I don't know if you would know this or Representative Abler, but is the department okay with this, Representative Abler? And who's bringing the language?
I presume there's some people in the audience nodding, Madam Chair. If you want to stand up and nod, that'd be good. You want to just say your little thing? We want to learn a word about surety bonds, and people need to know.
Okay, we've got a testifier here who can come and tell us that.
Oh, yeah.
This is something. Welcome to the committee.
It's a great topic. I don't know why you're...
Madam Chair, Patrick Carter from Department of Human Services, and we are okay with the language in this amendment.
Okay, and Mr. Carter, is this your language, or who's this? This is coming from the...
Yeah, we provided technical assistance on this language. Yep.
All right, members, any questions, any other questions on this amendment? Not seeing any. All those in favor, please say aye. Oh, I'm sorry. Members.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make sure that, surety bonds didn't get a bad rap because, candidly, that's what I spend my weekends on. Thank you, but you know what? I just don't want, that surety bonds to be discriminated against because they do hold a very dear and important place in the economic commerce of the state. So, that being said, I think it's a good bill. We should pass it.
Thank you.
All right. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Motion prevails. Woo-hoo. Surety bonds have had their due today.
Award for best testimony tonight.
All right. What's next? Okay. Okay, members, we'll take up the A41, which was just handed out. It's a really short couple lines. And members, this is going back to the HPSP bill that I am carrying, and it's language that was amended this morning in the Government Operations Committee at the suggestion of Representative Drazkowski. I thought he made a very good suggestion to improve the language of the bill, and it's not substantive. Well, I guess in a way it's substantive, but it just makes it a little clearer how the various boards are going to select the people that are going to be on the program committee in the bill. So, it had kind of squishy language that left that up to a means agreeable to them, and at Representative Drazkowski's suggestion, it's just a majority vote of the various boards. So any questions about that? All right, seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Motion prevails. Okay. All right, Representative Abler, do you want to go back to the A4 that you had moved previously?
Madam Chair, I'll remove the A4, and Mr. Nelson is here and his crew. And in the ensuing time, I did have some talking points that I had buried away, so I'm embarrassed I didn't get to answer the question about the agreement that this has been thought. It's actually very thoroughly vetted through every group that we would care about having an opinion that's here every day, and that didn't come out quite right. But all the people that weigh in with opinions have weighed in on this one, Madam Chair. Thanks.
Okay. And so were there further questions on this amendment? Representative Loeffler?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I did have a chance to talk to at least the ARM representative over the break, who assured me that at least some advocacy groups and others had been involved. I think we can add this to the bill, and if others who were involved in the efforts last year have concerns, I'm sure we'll be willing to hear them. It just did reverse a bunch of things, and we didn't hear that in the earlier discussion that the voices of others had been heard, but I'm told that at least in some processes they have.
Okay,
and Madam Chair,
Representative Loeffler, Representative Abler.
Can't see you through the forest of people here, but yeah. We do have a witness here, and I think that she could testify just kind of in short the problem they were solving and the process they went through and the resolution. The department kind of gave a very succinct thing. I think she can do a one-minute or so version of that, and it'll help members to get the context.
Okay, thanks, Representative Abler. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I'm Barb Turner with ARM. Thank you, Madam Chair. Basically, what this language is doing is clarifying and trying to rectify some things that were passed last year that, as we try to roll it out, weren't working or weren't making sense. And some of the things that we've changed are things that some of those very interested parties, like the parents, were working on last year, but the language didn't end up how they wanted it either because of the fact that this language went through in the finance bill and not a policy bill last year, so it really didn't get all the kind of eyes that it might have. So most of the language that's in here is either technical, you know, adjustments, corrections, clarifications, or other things that we've worked out with the parents who are involved, the ARC, NAMI, the department itself, Disability Law Center. We've engaged a lot of people in this process.
Okay, any questions, members? All right, not seeing any. Thank you very much, Ms. Turner. So Representative Abler renews his motion on the A4 amendment. Seeing no discussion, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, no. Motion prevails. Okay, the A42. Is that... That's a direction of the Commissioner, Triclosan Health Risks.
You just got it?
And it was just, this is one that was just handed out, members.
Okay, and I don't know if everyone has them because I have one, but thank you, Madam Chair. What this does is just directs the Department of Health to develop recommendations on ways to minimize triclosan health risks. We had a pretty good and extensive hearing on that, and the Health Department is doing some work on this, but what's currently in law doesn't direct them to bring us recommendations, and we thought we should add that we want to learn, as we're doing the research, what their recommendations would be.
Okay. Any questions from members on this? Does everyone have it? It was just handed out, so it should be kind of on top. Okay, it's pretty short. And then my question, Representative Loeffler, is whether this has a cost or if the department is, somebody from the department is here that can... Okay, Mr. Greenman is shaking his head. He says there's no cost to this. Okay. Any questions from members? Okay, seeing none, on the A42 amendment, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Huntley, did you want to move the A40?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd move the A40 amendment.
Okay, Representative Huntley moves the A40, and we'll give members a moment to find that. And that's Legislative Healthcare Workforce Commission.
Thank you.
And members, this was just handed out as well, so it might be on top. Okay. Go ahead, Representative Huntley.
This amendment would set up a commission to look at the healthcare workforce problem and then come back with a report to the legislature in December of this year. So they would be working during the summer and fall and early winter. We did have a hearing in I think it was in my committee, on the health care workforce problem, and we're faced with a very large shortage of primary care physicians, and the MMA has been studying this issue, and they predict that by 2010 we'll be short 1,000 primary care physicians and short another 1,000 of other kinds of physicians. We've talked about doing something with trying to upgrade things for nurse practitioners so that they can fill part of this for all physician assistants, but they can't fill the whole thing. And so we're going to have to figure out some way to do it, and it's very complex because the feds control the number of residency slots, and they've been locked at level from 1997, I think. And we are actually training about 30% more physicians in this country than there are residency slots for them to go to. So we're going to have a study to figure out what we're going to do. And my personal view is if Washington won't do what they have to do, then it's our job to make sure we have a good healthcare workforce. So,
amen.
And this bill just passed out of government ops about 10 minutes ago. So I just wanted to bring this before the committee, but I think I could withdraw the amendment, and you don't have to be included. It will not have to be included in the bill, but the study will go on, and I think it's one of the more important things that we can do.
All right. Thank you very much. So Representative Huntley withdraws the A40 amendment. And then, members, I just want to mention to you that in your packets there's an A37 amendment, which has also been withdrawn. So I just want to let you know that if you want to pull that out of your packets and set it aside. Okay, members, the A30, and we'll take a moment to find that. I don't have it in front of me.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's mine. And what it has to do with...
Representative Loeffler, just give members a second to get their hands on it.
Sure.
The A30.
If that was deeper digging, I could describe it.
Okay, please, go ahead.
We have a long night here, potentially
yep.
shorter.
Yep.
People may remember my presenting a bill on mental health training for the voluntary certification of foster homes that want to be designated as having a mental health certification. Since we last discussed this, we've had discussion with the providers and NAMI, and this is the agreement, along with a suggestion from the Department of Human Services to put some cross-references in the statutes to just make sure things work together.
Okay.
And this will have no cost the way it's written.
Okay. So Representative Loeffler has moved the A30. Is there any discussion? Questions? All right. I'm not seeing any. So all those in favor of the A30, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, did you say the A37 was withdrawn?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Schoen, the A37 is withdrawn. Okay. How about the A20 amendment?
Oh.
Is that Representative Abler?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I didn't hear back from Representative Norton about this. I dropped it off at her office last night. This is about the DNA and all that, the testing on congenital and heritable diseases. And I support that effort. This is meant to be friendly to the topic. I talked to some people, and the Department of Health doesn't officially support it, but I think that it's the direction that they would be going. And Ms. Aves can help me if I've left any details out, but just there's only... I mean, excuse me, not Ms. Aves, huh? Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Old habits die hard.
Now, Jamie can help me on this one, but so what we, the way the bill is written, it's you keep it for 71 days or for infinity, and it seems like something between 0 and 71 and infinity makes sense, and this gives an 18-year ledge, and then also the other thing, so that's what this all does, and so if you don't opt out, it stays till you're 18. You can opt in, have it be used for longer periods of time, which I understand is that these samples degrade and they're not even very useful by year 100. They just get old. And then on line 1.11, I just add the word research in front of developing new tests. And so that's just a semantic term, and I think developing new tests involves research, but the real research involving longevity or all those other things is left in the original definition. Did I say that right? Okay. And I think it's friendly. This brings me on board with the bill. This is a really important kind of thing we do. And the kind of compelling testimony we've heard over the years on this topic about kids who will stay alive longer or avoid some untimely harm is pretty amazing to me, and I think this gets the bill in order. So, thanks, Madam Chair.
All right, and Representative Abler, before I go to Representative Benson, I just do want to let you know that Representative Norton told me she does not want us to take the amendment. So she did. I'm sorry she didn't get back to you, but she did communicate that to me. So, Representative Benson.
Well, Madam Chair, thank you. I don't know if I need to ask a question then, but anyway, Representative Abler, I'm just wondering, if someone reaches the age of consent or age 18, what's the process then if there is a need or a wish to continue keeping these blood samples?
Representative.
Well, thanks, and I'm sorry that we didn't get to talk on the floor because this is meant to be friendly to the project. This is highly controversial, and I think that finding a way to bridge the gap on this intermediate storage issue is important. The ironic thing is that when an 18-year-old could choose to remain in the program, but very frankly, the quality of the sample by that point is quite degraded, and so it's almost irrelevant. The useful testing that goes on is well within the first several years and decade, at least. And so if a person would want to, like my high school senior son wants to retain his stuff, which I can't imagine he didn't think about that between football and everything else, they could then elect that, or the parent could choose to have it stay in perpetuity. So I'm not trying to do anything to cause harm to the program, but I do think that people, given the concern that people have, if the answer is 71 days or forever, some people will elect 71 days, which is a choice that I think is not a reasonable choice, because we heard from the woman here that 2 years and a day it got destroyed or something, and so I've not even talked to the advocates who are bringing this forward, but you want to have people use this thing. You don't want people to be all worried about it, and I just think I found a good hybrid middle ground, and I hope people would reconsider just blindly voting in favor of an author, but that this is a topic not owned by an author, a topic owned by us, and the merits of this program are owned by the people we serve, and if over fear of this in correct or wrong, that they realize this is forever, they might, that's what I think would dissuade people. So that's my concern, and I hope I answered your question. If I didn't, I'll be happy to take a crack at it.
Thank you,
Representative Zerwatz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm wondering if there's someone from the department. I don't see Mr. Koppel here, but I'm wondering if there's someone from the department that could speak to this. In previous conversations I've had with folks from the department, they've said while researchers would prefer the indefinite storage, that an 18-year timeline would still allow them to do the appropriate amount of testing and research for new test development. The big thing that the department, in conversations I've had with them, are concerned about is ensuring that it remains an opt-out and not an opt-in. And it sounds like that's what this does, is that it still would be an opt-out with a retention time of 18 years. And so I'm wondering if there's anyone here from the department that can talk about if the 18-year hold would allow for the continuation of development of new screening procedures and new research.
Well, Representative Zerwas, I don't see Mr. Koppel here. And remember, this is not the department's bill. But I think that the concern, as it's been expressed to me, I'm sorry, do we have somebody? Oh, okay.
Madam,
okay,
we could lay it over until he can get here.
Sorry, I was told that Mr. Koppel's in another hearing.
But we could lay it over until he comes. People should vote informedly. And this discussion is not going to be over. You know, and I mean, this will go forward. And I think if something like this gets resolved, the discussion is much shorter on the floor. And with people who are actually informed on the topic.
Right,
that's my interest in bringing it here.
Right. Well, Representative Abler, obviously the author isn't here either.
Right.
And what I was going to just express is that, as I'm understanding Representative Norton's concern, you know, these days many people have families that where the children are very far apart in age, for example, and where you get a situation where a young child is born with some kind of illness or even where a child develops an illness later on, that blood spot can still be very valuable to, and maybe we need the experts here, the docs, or maybe the advocates for the bill, who represent, I think, the Academy of Pediatrics, that was the author or the, you know, motivator behind this bill. But, you know, I have been given to understand that it's still important at that point, so... you know, having it sort of destroyed be the kind of the default position in the bill, which is what I think your amendment is doing, would be not Representative Norton's preferred position. But we can certainly withdraw it temporarily and then bring it back up when we've got.
Let's do that, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Okay, so we'll Representative Abler temporarily withdraws the 820. Okay, so members, I think we could take up the A6. And Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this bill, it deals with the screening that's needed for juveniles before placement in a mental health residential treatment center. And when the bill came up, the counties and NAMI weren't quite sure if they're interpreting it the same way in this language. Works it out and improves the clarity, and as far as I know, there's no controversy or cost.
Okay. Any questions for members? We're on the A6 amendment. Representative Loeffler's moved the A6. Do you need a minute to find it? And everybody got it? Okay. Okay. And just slow me down if we're going too fast, because I want people to know, believe me, I've been in the other chairs enough times. I want everybody to be able to know what we're voting on. So the A6, any questions? All right. Not seeing any. So all those in favor of the A6, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Motion prevails. Representative Loeffler, did you have another similar amendment that was...
I only have one more amendment, and if you would be willing to indulge that, I'm going to have to run downstairs to give ops real quick.
Okay, which one is that?
That's the A38.
Okay, members, Representative Loeffler moves the A38.
And I'm just going to make sure people have that in front of them because Mr. Chun has noted that I should make an oral amendment to correct a page number, and that's on line 1.3, where it says page 182, it should be page 186. Everything else here is page 186. So,
all right. So Representative Loeffler is amending her amendment, and this will be incorporated into the amendment on line 1.3. To change page 182 to 186. I already corrected my copy and I can't read the old language. 180, so it should say page 186, line 22. So now we all know what page to flip to figure out what the amendment is doing.
So that will be incorporated, Representative Loeffler.
Thank
go
you.
Ahead.
And Madam Chair, members, what this deals with is the issue that came up on Wednesday night where the Department of Human Services went over the proposal to rebid our Minnesota Care and MA contracts statewide and had brought us some language that I think, you know, even they will acknowledge is kind of quick and sort of a placeholder or at least a concept, and questions were raised. What this amendment does is adds in the comments that I had made that day, which is it gives them the option to have single counties for the largest and most diverse counties when they establish the regions. As I mentioned, sometimes Hennepin or Olmsted don't have the same issues as the surrounding counties, and that may there may be advantages or disadvantages to separating them, but that has often been done. And so it just allows them the option of having single counties. It doesn't say they have to, but it allows that to continue to be a possibility. It has a provision that in rating the proposals, they shall look at the information submitted by the health plan on the degree to which they have coordinated medical, behavioral health, and social services with the county, and this just adds that they shall take into account county input on that. So they'll be getting feedback from each county and weigh that along with what the health plan has to present. I've added under line 1.8 a demonstrated ability to respond to the need of special populations within that geographic area. So that they have capacity to serve populations with language, cultural, or other needs. Six is the degree, and this is for me, a degree to which the respondent is willing to indicate sufficient capacity to meet the demand for evening and weekend appointments for populations unable to leave work for basic primary care. And this, you know, probably needs some more discussion as well, but the concept is we have a lot of families that we work really hard to get into the employment market because we want them to be employed, and they want to be as well. But they oftentimes enter into the low-wage service sector, which doesn't provide for sick leave and the ability to get away from work, to take their kids in for well-child checkups, to get them immunized, for mom to get a pap smear or mammogram. And we just want to make sure that as they're evaluating the networks that they look at whether or not they have that, because otherwise we're spending a lot of money providing health coverage for families that really aren't able to take advantage of the preventative services we want them to. And that, Madam Chair, is the amendment.
All right. Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Questions, Representative Mack?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a couple questions for the author of the amendment. I like, you know, I'm looking at the first half of it, which I think makes a lot of sense. A few concerns starting at line 1.8 and kind of through what we're expecting of some of the respondents to the RFP. I guess the first question is when it comes to demonstrating an ability to meet the needs of special populations, is that something, I don't really have a handle on how we would measure that. Is that something Department of Human Services would have to create? Do they already measure that when it comes to this, or would this be a whole new standard we're setting? And I don't disagree that it's maybe a good idea. I'm just kind of wondering, vetting that and understanding how that works, what that means for our providers. So I guess I'll ask that question first, and then I have one other.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And when people fill out the applications for eligibility, they typically indicate what their language is, for example, or whether they're deaf or hard of hearing or those sorts of things. And so that information is available on a geographic basis. And just to make sure that the health plans are, you know, have an interpreter cadre if they don't have native speaking providers to handle the workload that they're bidding for. And so I think it's sharing information in the RFP process and then having the bidder respond back. And Dr. Golden from DHS said that they were comfortable and actually kind of liked that acknowledgement.
And Representative Mack.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And one, just another question. Well, and one, is if this will cost anything from DHS, if we know that, and if there's maybe someone here from DHS who could just comment on it. But then my other question to the author is on line 111 to 113, the degree to which the respondent is willing to commit to sufficient capacity in its network. I guess, what is, how do we define sufficient capacity? Who defines sufficient capacity? Is that kind of an arbitrary number? Is there a formula that so that the people, the respondents, kind of know what they need to aim for within their network? Just so we don't have a moving target. How is that? Yeah. How does that work?
And Representative Loeffler, Dr. Golden is here, and he can come up to the table. And, yeah. And but go ahead,
but
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Mack. Quite honestly, this whole piece here and an RFP needs a lot more fleshing out than what you see here. And even the things that the department put in the base language doesn't have measures and those sorts of things that gets developed as this continues to get refined. And so I see this as sort of a continued work in progress. Quite honestly, the language doesn't even say whether they're bidding for a one-year contract or a three-year contract or a five-year contract. So, I mean, we still need some serious work, and I think they put it in here because they felt like we needed to start to have some discussions on this. Since they were putting it in the policy bill, to me that says they're willing to go through this whole process without putting a fiscal note on it, or it would have been suggested for a bill that's more appropriately going to Representative Huntley's committee. And I think this is just going to continue to evolve, and I look forward to many of us being involved in the discussions with them. We heard from the health plans that they were kind of caught by surprise as well and don't feel like they've had a chance to have discussion and input. This was just a way, I think, for me to say, here's some things we think should be in as part of that continuing discussion as it moves forward.
Thank you. And
Representative Mack,
thank you.
You want to ask Dr. Golden?
Yeah, well, and I appreciate the follow-up from Representative Loeffler, and certainly want to hear from Mr. Golden. I guess just as a comment just prior to that, I do agree with a lot of what Representative Loeffler said, and I'm trying to get a handle on how much the legislature is involved in what is in this RFP. I mean, obviously these contracts are huge and significant for the people that we represent, so I think the legislature plays a key role in what we're asking for, measurable outcomes and things of that nature. And I guess just, you know, given that, it is a large thing that we have out there in this bill with large and widespread implications, so whether we have to do more work between now and the floor, which probably isn't ideal, but I don't know in terms of just good policy and with such a large impact as these programs have, if we will need more detail in this bill and in this part of the bill in the procurement process, or if we feel good about just leaving that all up to DHS. You know, I personally think that we as a legislature should have more of a say in that. So with that, I guess I'd love to hear, Mr. Golden's response, but just a little concerned over the direction of
right.
this whole
and
thing.
And Representative Mack, to my knowledge, since I've been here, the legislature has not gotten very deeply involved in the procurement process at all. And, in fact, I would say that in years past, a lot of things happened that weren't so good that we all heard about through audits and so on. And you know, I think the current administration has tightened things up quite a bit. And as we know, there's a lot of movement in healthcare and a lot of movement in, you know, these are our patients, meaning the state's patients, the state's money. And I view this as an effort by DHS to try to move with the times, to try to get better value for our dollar in terms of improving health and so on, but I'll let Dr. Golden speak for himself on this. So did you want to direct a question to him on that, or do we just want him to comment on what he's heard? Dr. Golden, do you feel like you can give us a few words about your reaction at maybe Representative Loeffler's amendment and any of the conversation you've heard here?
Sure. Madam Chair, committee members, for the record, Jim Golden with the Department of Human Services. You know, I think much of this reflects Representative Loeffler's discussion the other day of making sure that we have appropriate county involvement. That's certainly our intention. We don't have any concerns with that. With regard to some of the questions that Representative Mack had with regard to special populations, in general, these are federal requirements for both medical assistance and Minnesota Care. Really, the types of things that we're looking at are, for example, for non-English speakers, that there would be appropriate interpreter services. For people who may be deaf, that they too would be able to have appropriate interpreter services. Perhaps in some of the parts of the state where we have a large number of American Indians, that we would have culturally appropriate providers that would serve those populations as well. With regard to questions or lines 11 through 13, you know, I think our issue on that is that's an access issue. And I think really what we have said and what the commissioner said when she was here is we'd really like to engage the counties to make sure we understand what they view as their access issues. Certainly some of the counties might view this as an access issue. Others might have other issues that they would like. It's a little bit more specific, but we've committed to continue to work with Representative Loeffler on that issue. With regard to costs, we don't anticipate that these requirements would change any of what we have in costs.
Okay, Representative Abler.
Well, thanks, and not so much for the witness there, but I appreciate the department's view, and there's a cadre of people that work in this industry. Does any of the plans want to comment about this? And since I don't remember hearing a lot of testimony about this, but we do want it to work. We have a partnership with the department and these plans and on the counties. So,
right, we did have testimony on this on
right,
the underlying language, Representative Abler.
But it was brief, if I recall.
Have,
but yeah,
welcome to the
just to the amendment, at least.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joel Yulin. I am here on behalf of UCARE and also the Council of Health Plans. Just had a chance to take a look at this language. I think that, first of all, just as a little bit of background and additional detail from the other day's testimony, we've had some additional discussions with the department that occurred this morning. I wasn't a participant of that, but I know that there has been some additional discussions, and we're continuing to look through this language. So I would still say that this is something that is in progress as far as how this is going forward. As to the amendment itself, I think that our biggest concern is with lines 1.11 through 1.13. Certainly, I understand the point that is being made in that we need to make sure that there is additional access for providers. At the same time, it is pretty difficult for a health plan to set the hours of our providers. We can certainly offer incentives and things along that line to try to work with our providers to make sure that they are open at accessible hours and are increasing their access as much as possible. But the reality is that that can be very challenging, especially out in greater Minnesota where there is very limited options in the first place.
And thanks, and I appreciate that. And I just the one thing I want to remind the committee is the initial comments of Mr. Yulin that this is a bit of a work in progress, and we can make anybody do anything that we want to. It doesn't mean they can do it, and that it'll be effective. And so I think it's our desire and Representative Loeffler's desire to really consider the evolving nature of our people's lives, and it's much more 24/7 than it used to be. And I think that we should adopt the amendment today, but just recognize that when this moves into conference, that we want to be open to the dialogue that's going to come out of that. So I think that'll make this a better bill. Thanks.
Right. Thanks, Representative Abler. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I really appreciate that, and I think we all need to kind of keep thinking about this and evolving it. The one thing I have heard feedback from a variety of people about, and that this amendment doesn't address, because I tried to get a hold of Mr. Golden earlier today and wasn't successful before this was drafted, is there is still concern about whether or not we should give this a time frame, whether how long the contracts are. And the department had indicated that, you know, they wanted some real flexibility about that, but I think we really, I think the health plans and others have some legitimate issues about saying we want to know if we're bidding for a year or a three-year contract or whatever, and I think that's a continuing discussion that members should think about as well.
Okay, seeing no further discussion, Representative Loeffler has moved the A38 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, no. Motion prevails. Okay, is anybody offering the A17 amendment? A17. Going once, going twice. Representative Huntley, was that yours? It's been withdrawn. Okay, the A17 has been withdrawn. And did
we do this one? We did. Yes. Okay. Okay. How about this one? Okay, Representative Abler of the Aid 19. Is that yours?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay.
And this is, we discussed this in finance and just in deference to the process, which I do like to follow, this is actually more technical than the First Amendment I offered, Madam Chair. And it does have some substance. That's the one with the that we didn't do because it was so controversial. That's supposed to be a joke. It's getting late. In 2011, we made an effort to focus the loan forgiveness programs on places. Is that what it was, loan forgiveness?
That's what I understand.
Yeah, okay. On areas that had high needs and were deeply rural and trying to get people to go there. And you know, Anoka needs doctors, but, you know, not as bad as, not really, because we have lots of them. But some places do not, like Cook, for instance. And so in our language, we went a little too narrow and excluded places like Cook, which had a community health clinic, which would like to have people go there to serve this very underserved area. So working, the department actually brought this to me. Mr. Schoenbaum's here if anybody wants to hear a little bit more about this, but it doesn't cost any money. It just opens up quite slightly, actually, a list of cities, maybe 10 cities far-flung that would be able to qualify for their clinic could apply for these grants. They're awarded competitively, and so at least they could compete. That's what it does.
Okay. Questions from members? Okay. And I would just say that we did hear this in Representative Huntley's committee the other day, and at the time I made the comment that it seemed to have skipped policy. I thought there was a little policy in it. But I do want to make sure that it doesn't have a cost, because we can't put it in our bill, of course, if it has any kind of a cost. And can we be reassured of that?
You've been waiting all this time.
I certainly support. You know, I'm not opposed to the amendment. So
we want to earn our
welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mark Schoenbaum from the Health Department. I think Representative Abler said it well. This is just a small technical fix to the focusing of the program that was done in 2011. It doesn't cost anything. It doesn't change the number of selections in each of the occupations that are eligible to receive loan forgiveness. It just slightly broadens the communities in which those participants could work.
Okay.
And Madam Chair, I just want to
Representative Abler.
I want to commend Mr. Schoenbaum. When he came in to tell me this, we made an effort to improve something in 2011, and he said it so nicely, but we kind of screwed up one town. So that was, he said that really nice, and so this is the fix. So.
Okay.
I said it, he didn't have.
All right. Thank you, Representative Abler. Any questions from members? All right. Seeing none, all in favor of the A-19 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Motion prevails. Is anybody offering the A140957, direction to commissioner demonstration projects, or did we do that already? We did that one. I'm sorry, members. That's right. That was. Did we do? Okay. No. Yes. A140957. Okay, no, we have not done this one, but it is very much like one that we did do. Is Representative Allen, is this yours?
Madam Chair, that's withdrawn.
Oh, okay, so that one is withdrawn. The A140957 is withdrawn. Okay. Are we still waiting to see if we can... Okay, Mr. Koppel is still not here. Representative Moran has one, so we could take up the A14 amendment. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, this amendment we discussed at length the other day, it simply in the outstate area reduces the 10%, outside the 7-county metro area, reduces the 10% requirement for dentists to... have as MA patients if they take any at all. And this requirement has resulted in a severe crisis of shortage of dental services for nursing home people and rural people on medical assistance because dentists simply cannot afford to take that number of patients and still maintain their business. I just remind members of the testimony by Representative Norton, who has studied this issue much more than I have and was in complete agreement with this particular amendment. In talking with the Minnesota Dental Association, Jacob Milner, he would prefer an overall fix, but this is definitely a step in the right direction. Is he here? I don't know.
I don't know, but is there someone from the department here, Mr. Carter maybe, or someone who can speak to the, or, okay, there is someone here. So okay, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Madam Chair, my name is Julie Marcourt. I'm the Director of Purchasing and Service Delivery at DHS.
Okay. Ms. Marcourt, thanks for coming down. So could you tell me, does this amendment have a cost?
We have been analyzing this and really working hard to try to figure that out. Unfortunately, we can't quantify the cost or any potential savings. What we can do when we look at the analysis of this is what this would do is allow dentists perhaps who are complying with Rule 101 today, who are seeing 10% of their patient volume in order to see the patients that are in local government, school districts in their area, city employees, state employees who may live in their area, workers' compensation, they could decide, and it's reasonable to conclude based on the rates we pay versus what all of those other dental payers pay, that it would be a reasonable business decision for them to make to see less MA and see more of the patients for whom they get paid better. When you look at our rates, that's not an unreasonable conclusion to make at all. And it is certainly consistent with what we have heard from the dental practices. Now, that being said, I think it's also reasonable to assume that there are certainly some dentists who want to serve patients in their community at a certain level that is certainly not at 10%. So, you know, where those numbers balance out, there will be dollar shifting, definitely. There will be people going down. There will be people going up. If we believe that there is likely to be more, and I think we would conclude that while some would go up, it's likely that more might come down, that we would lose overall in access. While that would be a savings, potentially, on the dental services, we could also make a reasonable conclusion that would we need to transport people further, would we see an increase in emergency department visits because people can't see a dentist and then they have pain that they need treated. So I think there's a lot of places where we could see a fiscal impact, but unfortunately we have no reliable study, we have no reliable information, there is no validated method to predict how all of those things would happen. So we're unable to quantify it, but I think we could comfortably say dollars will move. Absolutely, they will move. But
okay. And Mr. Berg, I wanted to, okay, see if Mr. Berg could come down to our fiscal analyst for Health and Human Services and give us an opinion on this as well. Mr. Berg?
Madam Chair, I'm Doug Berg. I'm the fiscal analyst for the Higher Education Finance Committee, and we had a conversation earlier about whether this amendment would have a fiscal impact, and I think I would say in a different way what was just said. It certainly would have a fiscal impact. It would have an impact on service. The issue of whether it can be quantified or not is a difficult one. It would be the department's job to do that, but it certainly has some sort of impact on service delivery. So your question was, is that a fiscal issue I would say it is, although I don't know that they can quantify it or not.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Berg. Representative Grunhagen?
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. And again, we've been over this quite a bit. You know, we're just lowering the bar. It's at critical stage in rural areas. And you talk about increased cost when people can't get the dental care that they need and the infection spreads. Had a MMA lobbyist tell me that they had, at HCMC, they had a $1 million claim by somebody who was not able to get the dental care and the infection spread up into their brain and down the side of their neck. And by the time it was over, it was a $1 million claim. So this will increase access. The other thing I just say about our dentist, okay, I find them to be some of the most generous people that I know and professionals in our community. In my area and also surrounding areas, they do a smile program where they allow children to come in and they do dental work for a whole day for free, okay? So I don't see dentists being punitive when they're willing to do charitable care, and I know dentists in my district who do charitable care over and above what they do for the children just to help somebody out. Now, they limit it because there's a loss, but the here you're giving them the same opportunity, and at least they get a little bit of a reimbursement, and they'll take care of those patients. Again, my sister's worked for a dentist for over 10 years. He was taking about 5 or 6% of his patients as MA. They couldn't take any more. He just bought the practice, young dentist. He got reported. Now they take none at all. And so we know the effect is less care, greater chance of more medical cost. And I would urge members to approve this. And I believe it will produce good results. And I trust the generosity of our dentists in this state.
Well, Representative Grunhagen, I think the issue that we really have today is a germaneness issue for this amendment, because in our Health and Human Services policy bill, we cannot carry an amendment or a bill that has a cost. And so that's what why I asked Mr. Berg to address this and Ms. Marquardt from the department. I think it's very clear from their testimony here today that this does carry a cost. Now, I understand your good intentions here. We all have those good intentions. I think it's what's very clear to me on the substance of the issue is that while you say you've seen this one case where a person was stopped from taking MA patients, I think many people believe that the Rule 101 is actually increasing access for people. So I don't know in your district whether removing this rule would increase access or perhaps decrease access, and that's a very real possibility that could be it could be decreased. But regardless of that, I am going to rule that this is not germane to the bill. Now, I just received a note from Representative Mullery telling me it's a jurisdiction issue. However, I checked with House Research on this and was told that germaneness is the proper language. But I think that regardless whether we call it jurisdiction or germaneness, the reality is we cannot carry a fiscal issue in our bill. And so I'm going to rule that it can't go on
Madam
this
Chair.
Bill. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I would simply say that when I had the amendment drawn up, there was no fiscal impact. And again, I agree dollars are shifting around, but there's no way to measure or study it. We had testimony from the department in the past. They don't have a mechanism to study what would actually happen. So I would challenge the ruling of the chair as far as germaneness, and I would ask the committee to vote to overrule vote on whether to support the ruling of the chair or not.
Well, Representative Grunhagen, I don't know that we can do that in committee. I mean, I was told by House Research that the chair gets to rule on whether it's germane to the bill, because if the bill is not, if we are carrying something in the bill that's fiscal, it will send the bill to finance and we will miss our deadline. So I think that's my call to make. And so,
we could vote unanimously against it.
Right, so Representative Mullery, who's been here a lot longer than I, is okay. Upholding me on that. So I'm sorry, Representative Grunhagen, I appreciate your interest in the issue. We disagree on the potential impact, but regardless, I think you know, even within what you're saying this will increase access. Well, if it increases access, it in fact increases costs. So that is very much underlying your argument, and I
it'll decrease the emergency room visits. Okay.
Well, okay, but there are dollars that are going to move around. Representative Abler wants to weigh in.
Well, thanks. And what I was going to say earlier was, having had way too much experience with fiscal notes, being surprised on both ways, I think that we don't mind the positive impact that this would do. I think as a committee, if there was no fiscal impact, we'd say, well, let's help out, let's say Greater Minnesota have better access to their dentists for these teachers and for the state employees and all that. I don't know what the fiscal note would show, but I was going to offer a suggestion to the chair. If this could be adopted with the agreement that it in fact had fiscal impact, if this is going to the floor, then that would be removed at the first sign of a fiscal note that could be bona fide. Because I'm surprised there's not one dental lobbyist in the room. I was looking around, and this has always been a big deal for them, and maybe they didn't even see it in the packet. But this is a topic that's very interesting to many people about how to improve dental access and so on. And with that kind of interest and the department actually doing their math, they would decide if there is indeed an impact. And ironically, maybe the impact would be less MA marginally. And any ER costs, they don't do dynamic fiscal notes. It might actually show to be a money saver, which is, then it would belong in the Huntley bill if it saved money. But as an irony. But why, I was going to ask the witness who left if they even follow up on this, if anybody even checks on this Rule 101. I believe in my mind that it's that nobody even evaluates this to scrutinize to see if they can be a provider or not. No one has asked me how many MMA people I see in my practice. We probably exceed this number. But maybe you shouldn't just ask that question. But then I was just going to suggest the chair that would be a way to actually help a possible good idea move forward. So,
well, Representative Abler, I'm not willing to take that risk because if this has a cost, it sends the bill to finance. I can't carry in the bill anything that has a cost. And
So
I'm not going to be able to entertain that. And I think, you know, as I said before when we had this discussion, I think it's a worthy discussion, but I think it needs to take place, you know, not as an amendment, but in a context where we can consider all the things that impact limiting access for folks in rural areas and in urban areas. I mean, I think that access to dental for our MA patients is really a serious issue all across the state. We definitely need to deal with it. But I think we also did hear from the dentists, from Mr. Sposetto, who was here, and I think from Ms. Marquardt, that it's not necessarily the number one concern, the number one thing that seems to block access, that there are other issues, mainly the rates we pay. And we really should look at this issue in a broader context, but I can't take the amendment and then do as you're suggesting because I think it throws the whole bill into jeopardy, and I'm not willing to take that.
I just asked the witness one question, Madam Chair, just to comment. Does anybody follow up on this 101 thing, or is this just a boogeyman thing that people are afraid about?
Ms. Marquardt.
Madam Chair, we do provide our list of enrolled providers to the Department of Labor and Industry, and when they receive complaints of providers, they have an opportunity to review, is that provider on our list? As a matter of comprehensive, do we go out and audit? No, we have no mechanism to do that. So there's a limited enforcement.
All right, thanks. So, Madam Chair and Representative Grunhagen, I would suggest to you with this withdraw your objection and work on this some more. And I think it may well be that this is not an issue. I bet, and just tell a dentist, no one's checking anyway, and rely on the good nature that we've had. And it's this comes up all the time. So it's just anyway. I'm done, Madam Chair. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Representative Abler. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to speak from another angle on this. I gave this a lot of thought, and I've spoken with several people, including Mr. Schoenbaum and the operator of the Open Door Clinic in Mankato, people who have a good understanding of low-income people and access to dental care. I think it's a huge issue. Okay. But my take on this is the opposite of Representative Gruenhagen's. This is an incentive that creates some structural incentive for low-income folks to have access to health care. And I happen to live in an area where there are a lot of state employees. And so I got to believe that it is an effective incentive. And then I think about it's not only where I live, but where every community college is, where every state university is. We have state employees throughout the state. And that's an interesting incentive, and maybe that incentive isn't working well, and maybe we need to have enforcement, but let's not throw that incentive away. This is a critical issue, and I think that what we share is really a commitment to making sure that low-income people in our state have access to quality dental care. But this, let's be really careful with what we're doing, and we cannot assume that we get rid of this rule that somehow we'll magically have better access to dental care. So I think we need to be careful, and I'm a little scared of the momentum that this thought has. This may make work, but as was pointed out earlier, we haven't had hearings on this. We haven't figured out a way to study it. So I speak strongly against the amendment, and I hope the chair just maintains her position and argues that this is not apt in this bill, but even on the floor, I think should this come up on the floor, we have some responsibility as this committee related to this, and I hope we are open to the idea that this project or this Rule 101 is an effective tool in the state of Minnesota.
Just all right, thank you. You want
one final
all right,
comment.
One final word.
Very quick. Yeah, I'll ask for an official fiscal note and see what comes back. I was initially told there is no cost, so that's why I left it at that. But the other thing is that it is a crisis situation in our rural areas, and I think that this would help create some additional access from the input I've had from other reps also. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, so this is not germane. Okay. Representative Moran, wrong, getting tired. A13.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move the A13 amendment.
Okay.
Madam Chair and members, what can I say about this? You know, when we look at breast cancer and mammograms, it is a really, really an important issue and a fact of what happens so often to women in relationship to breast cancer. And I moved this bill because I chose this amendment because it was brought to me. One, because it is a very, very important issue for most women. But after having conversations with my chair and also just looking at, you know, some research that was brought to me around the density of the high density mammograms and what that would mean in relationship to cancer, and looking at the language within the bill, that is so, you know, really descriptive of what we would ask a doctor to send out to patients. And I don't know if this is something that we often do. We may suggest that a letter go out, but really asking and being really descriptive of what that language looks like and putting it in statute, I'm not really at this point sure that this is something that I would like to move. I know for myself and, you know, having gone through mammograms that doctors currently do, if it's something that's abnormal about that mammogram, a letter does go out. But again, just so much, just really looking at how, you know, we within this amendment is really describing word for word what that letter would need to look like. I'm just right now currently at the place where I don't think this is the right direction. Two, I think also since this bill was never heard, since this issue was never heard by us in committee, and I think that maybe it's something that we need to vet and flush out and talk more about in committee. And I think there's ample time and another opportunity come next session if those who feel like this is something that we need to really, is this something that really needs to happen, that there will be an opportunity for that to happen at a time other than right now. And so because of that, I'm going to withdraw the amendment.
Okay. Representative Mack, did you have a comment? The amendment's been withdrawn, though.
Sure. Okay. Fair enough. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I didn't realize it was going to be withdrawn. I was planning on supporting it and was a co-author on the bill. And so a little disappointed at this point, and won't reoffer it now, but maybe between now and the floor we can keep talking about it. I just think it's important for members to know, you know, there is already a notice that has to go out, that radiologists have to send out with mammogram results. This would just say to include this one piece of information that doctors and the community around cancer really thinks would potentially save lives and bring important awareness around something that women aren't aware of. And I think it's critical information that women should have in their hands. So, you know, I'll talk with Representative Moran offline afterwards, but hope to bring this back and maybe see if we can get it passed on the floor, because I think the sooner we can get this kind of information in the hands of women, the better. We're not asking them to send another letter to do anything. They already have to send out the results of a mammogram and notice of the patient and the doctor. This would just be adding one piece of information to that same letter that the medical community thinks is important for women to know. And so I'm sorry it's being withdrawn today, but hopefully we can keep talking about it because I think it's really important.
So it looks like we're debating a withdrawn amendment. Representative Abler.
Madam Chair, I'll reoffer if you want to debate it. But do people not want to vote for this? It seems like it's a simple thing, and this is the policy committee on the floor. We should have people who are on GovOps deciding this. I think we should decide it here. Is there some reason that people just are uncomfortable with going forward?
Representative Abler, okay, well, I am very uncomfortable with this amendment, and I could, if we really want to spend the time now, I could really tell you why, but there are a lot of reasons. For one thing, I have information that I did not distribute. You know, the medical community is not all of a mind around this. This is really a very controversial topic. This is something that's been done in some states. The research shows that there's really no connection between, the connection has not been established between having dense breasts and mortality from breast cancer. And I understand the great feelings that people have around wanting to do something to impact the issue. I mean, I truly do. We all feel that way. You know, on this committee, I mean, it's one of the wonderful things about this committee. Everybody really cares about this issue very much. But earlier in the day, I heard Representative Mack say we shouldn't tell doctors what to do. And when you mandate in statute a certain notice that a physician or a provider has to give a certain notice when a certain thing happens, I feel that we're really crossing into an area where we are kind of crossing the line, especially in an area like this where there is a lot of debate and the jury is still out on the meaning of this. Perhaps more importantly, the jury is out on what you do when you see this finding. And so I know many people here don't like it, for instance, when they see on TV all those ads for drugs that say, go see your doctor because this drug can help you. And a lot of people feel that inappropriately drives demand for certain drugs. Well, doing something like this may, in some opinions, inappropriately drive demand for a second and third test, which can be unnecessary, can be costly, can have its own, create its own problems, as I know you all know. If unnecessary testing has a real downside as well. I'm not saying I know whether a test is unnecessary in this situation, but the medical community, to my knowledge, is not of a mind about that. So to me, to put in statute, you must say this thing when this other thing occurs, is really not where we ought to be going. So,
Madam Chair, I just read two things?
Yes.
Because this is not something that I was well informed about. You know, so you do a search. And some of the things that I came up with that was shared with me is that this statement, that was a study of over 9,000 women who were confirmed with a confirmed diagnosis of breast cancer, that states that high mammographic density was not associated with the risk of death from breast cancer or death from all causes combined. That was one thing that they said there. Another was there was a study that found an increase in risk of breast cancer death associated with low breast density among Pacific subgroup was more likely. They said low density in breast cancer was more associated. And so, and again, you know, there's this part of me that know and believe that women should be informed enough to make choices, but we also know that there is a letter that goes out if there is a mammogram that is suspicious looking, that you are able to go back to your doctor and have that discussion about what are the next steps. So the biggest part to me is that the language is just really, really descriptive. I do believe that. And then the research that says that there's no real correlation between density and breast cancer. So, again, I just believe that if we need to come back, if this needs to come back into a discussion where we can have a conversation and have others come in to testify on this, then I think we have an opportunity to do that. It is not as though we are that women are not notified when a mammogram is not when a mammogram has does look suspicious.
Great, thank you, Representative Moran. Representative Matt?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks for the leeway. I don't mean to belabor it. I just the one issue I think is important to clarify is that it's my understanding that you're right. There's no connection between density and cancer, your risk of cancer. It's more the issue of the way. If you have a certain type of tissue and a certain density of tissue, it's much harder to see a tumor for it to come up. It both shows up white. So they say a lot of times that women will come in, they'll have a clear check. The next year they come back, and they're in stage 4 cancer, and it turns out the tumor had been there for a couple of years, and it kept getting missed because of dense tissue. And it's, so it's not necessarily that dense tissue causes breast cancer, it's the difficultness or the difficulty in detecting it. And so maybe this isn't the most ideal way of getting at that, but I think informing women of that issue in terms of how they do, you know, alerting them to self-exams, things like that, is critical information that women should have their hands on and aren't going to know any other way, really. So that's really my concern. There's no correlation between density and cancer, but there is a difficulty in detecting cancer because of density, and that's my concern. And women should have that information.
Well, okay. I mean, Representative Mack, I just think that this is an issue that really, because of all these, because of all these complexities around it, and because I think there's really a scientific complexity and a complexity around how the medical community might view this, that I think personally that it's an issue that really deserves a full hearing where we get information really from the medical community. And that's why I wasn't able to give this a hearing this year. It came in rather late. I didn't think we could devote what would likely be at least an hour to this. And that's why I wasn't able to hear it. And so, you know, it may be that it may be it's an issue deserving a further study, but my feeling about it is that certainly as an amendment, we don't have the expertise to make these kinds of calls here on the committee without any testimony. And, you know, so in any event, thank you, Representative Moran. So the 813 is withdrawn. So we are back on the 820. And
thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll reoffer the 820.
All right. Representative Abler moves the 820.
And Mr. Madam Chair, and
yeah, Representative Abler.
My mother at a young age taught me how to count. it's not the same as five, is it, Mr. Representative Schoen? But I've been here 16 years now, and when the chair doesn't like something and when the author who's not here doesn't like something, and you just kind of get a sense of how the vote might go. But while it's being offered, if maybe Mr. Griffin could come down, if he would, Mr. Koppel's not here, just to discuss the topic, because this will come up later, and I'll work with the author, who I wish would have got back to me on the floor today, since we had time. But just to restate what this is attempting to do, is to make this program more useful to as many people as who could actually take advantage of it by having a second window of time between 71 days and infinity. And also the little technical thing about the research. So, and Mr. Griffin, I've not talked to him at length about this amendment. We've worked on this topic for a long time, and so representing the advocates for the bill, I don't even know what he's going to say, which is dangerous when you ask a witness to come do that, but just if he would react to it, and then we'll move on, Madam Chair.
Mr. Griffin.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, I'm sorry. It was a late night last night, and my name is Phil Griffin. I'm here speaking today on behalf of the March of Dimes Minnesota chapter, and thank you, Representative Abler, for the opportunity. We were here until about 11:30 last night, Madam Chair, in the Senate Judiciary Committee with this bill before us in bill form, Senator Marty's bill on the Senate side. And I wish that we had the witnesses who were here last night to be able to talk to you. And I won't belabor this, but we had a geneticist, a physician who is a researcher at the University of Minnesota, and two parents, one of whom lost a child, and the other one of whom's child, as you heard in Policy Committee, when this bill was before you, Ms. Olson, who is a volunteer at the March of Dimes, discovered because of the newborn screening 5 days after she was released that her child suffers from a metabolic disorder that saved her child from profound mental retardation or a 75% chance of death in glycemia. That's why we want to have the kind of newborn screening program that would be the best in the country. And I'll just give you the one example that we've discovered and why we think long-term storage may be something that's worth having in the bill, and that is the discovery of Wilson's disease and a test that can test for that one, which can come back years after the storage has begun and still be treated in a possible very, very good way. And this is something that has an impact well beyond what you're talking about at the newborn screening level, but goes on to have an impact on our education system and on our human services system as we move these people through. If they are not treated, phenylketonuria is a great example of those costs. And I know you and I agree on these things, Representative Abler, but that's the reason that the March of Dimes is supportive of the bill, and we'd ask you to move forward without the amendment.
All right,
Madam Chair. Thank you,
Mr. Griffin. Representative Abler.
And could you comment on line 1.11, just clarifying the word that developing new tests is in fact research. Is that, did you look at that part too?
Madam Chair, Representative Abler, I do think that developing new tests is research, and that's an important thing. And I think the March of Dimes, which raises about $9 million in this state a year for research that goes to Mayo and the university, is the reason that we've gone from PKU, when this program was founded, as the only screen, to now 54 screens that we can do and treat these kinds of metabolic and genetic disorders.
Madam Chair.
Representative Abler, and if I could just comment on that as well. Representative Abler, I think the reason that it's worded the way it is and the word is out is to draw a clear line in the bill between purposes for the program itself, which includes developing new tests, and research as it's described after that. And as you know from the bill, makes a clear distinction about what is required. So outside of the, whether we want to call it research or not, outside of the purposes of the program, which includes developing new tests, however you want to characterize that, written consent is needed to do anything outside of that. And I would venture to guess that that's why the word research is not used there, to draw that very clear line. So you may, obviously, to develop those tests, you have to do research, but it is a purpose that is in this bill directly connected to the program itself. Representative Abler.
Well, I got that, but it just seems disingenuous to not call it research. I'm just trying to remove an objection which has come up, which I thought was legitimate, which seemed technical. Mr. Griffin, what do you think about that? You just actually used the word yourself. Is that friendly? Never mind the 18-year thing, which is not going to happen today, but how about
Mr.
that?
Mr. Griffin?
Mr. Chairman, and I'm sorry, Madam Chair, I'm having a hard time with this lack of sleep. Madam Chair, Representative Abler. I don't know that I can give you an answer that works. The chair is correct in that we're trying to define the difference between what's been called program integrity and fixing, you know, the ability to calibrate machines, develop new tests, and those kinds of things versus straight research. And I see my colleague, Mr. Dick from the American Academy of Pediatrics, is with me. And Madam Chair, if I can do what we always do on Academy Award nights, I'd like to thank the Academy.
And gentlemen, we do also have another question from Representative Zerwas, and I wonder if before I, Representative Abler, I don't know whether it was to this point,
whatever.
Representative Zerwas, or did you do you want to just let us finish with this and then ask?
Yeah, finish,
okay.
Finish with Representative.
Okay. So, Representative Abler, do you want to, or is the question sufficiently clear, Mr. Dick, that you can take
it? Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Eric Dick with the Minnesota Chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics and also the Minnesota Medical Association. As Mr. Griffin mentioned, we had folks who could speak to this far more intelligently than he and I here last night, and this is very much the deep end of the pool for this humble lobbyist. But we actually, I had a conversation with a pediatrician just last night, Dr. Sue Berry from the University of Minnesota, on this very point, and she firmly stated that studies to develop new tests are not research. And the reason being, in the vast majority of cases, new tests are developed by using standards that are determined through the federal newborn screening work, and they're compared to Minnesota values. So in a classic sense, it's not Bunsen burners and lab coats at MDH. It is more comparing numbers on different sheets. So it, in a classic sense, it's not research.
Okay. Representative Abler?
Representative Zerwas, I have a question.
Okay. Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess to either of the testifiers, I guess my concern, and what I've always kind of expressed a concern about, is whether or not in current statute, in current language, it prohibits the development of new tests, and I think that that's not appropriate. And I think that is something that Minnesota, we're better than that, and I think we've been a hallmark and a leader in all areas of healthcare, and I think you can look around and see for literally the thousands of children that have been saved by the development of new tests. Can we talk a little bit about the retention period and the 18 years versus kind of the open-ended retention period, and what's the impact if we limited 18 years? What's the impact on development of new tests and that effort versus if it's opened up? That it's it would be an opt-out for kind of lifelong, and just kind of discuss that. And I have a couple more follow-ups after that.
Madam Chair, members, it's a good question. In a word, accuracy. When we have extended storage of both samples and data, you have a far broader perspective on what the Minnesota population looks like, and that changes over time. From the Academy's perspective, we would argue that newborn screening is just like any other part of a medical record and should not, by nature, be destroyed. And finally, in the cases of exceedingly rare conditions, those 1 in 70,000, 1 in 100,000, those cases don't come along very often. And when you're destroying data at 18 years or destroying spots at 18 years, you're drastically limiting the work that can be done to identify those exceedingly rare conditions.
Representative Zerwas?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. And so I understand the balance here in what we're trying to strike. I will not be supporting the Abler Amendment today in committee because I think, and as we've said before, this effort needs to continue. It needs to improve, and we need to make sure that as we work for our children, you know, I look at this as a life issue for me, and the thousands and thousands of children that have been saved, and thousands of children that will be saved in the future, and I think we need to do what's best for our children, and if that is longer retention for better development of tests to save more children in the future, that's what we owe Minnesota. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Zerwas. Representative Abler?
Yeah, just to kind of wrap it up. But I, Representative Zerwas, I've given your speech, and I agree with everything you said. I won't belabor any speech at all here. But I think the bill can be improved without losing everything that you wanted to do. And the families who are concerned, who opt for the 71-day thing, are going to get none of that. And that's the risk that some people are going to maintain. If you lose 1 or 2% of people who for some reason get frightened about infinite storage, then the benefits you have said on all your great ideas don't happen. Most people given a choice will opt for infinity because they just, that's how I know it to be. They don't, but if you, and that's what I'm trying to help you with here. And so, Madam Chair, I'm not going to take it to vote. So the rest of you don't have a chance to vote no on my amendment because you don't have that chance. It's not going to be yours today. But I'll continue to work with these fine people. But these, just understand that this member has a high amount of regard for these tests. And I worked with this group all along, and I have a plaque on my wall showing my enthusiasm that they recognize. And this is the thing we can be really proud of in our advanced culture we have, where we can discover these things and give these individuals, these children and young adults, a chance to make a huge difference. So I appreciate the good discussion. This is what I was hoping for. A little different outcome, but we'll do some more work, Madam Chair, and see where there is to go. With that, I'll withdraw the amendment, and I want to thank you for a good hearing today and a bill that's going to do some good for the state. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Representative Abler. Representative Abler withdraws the A-20.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Thank
you. I can just say I appreciate the opportunity to appear before you. This is not my bracelet, and I'm sure one of the other witnesses here would appreciate having it today. I will not be taking it with me.
All right. So you say, Mr.
Credibility is at stake.
All right. Members, are there any other amendments? We have none here in front of us, but I want to give members a chance if there are any others. I'm not seeing any. So we will close the amendment taking here. And our members, any discussion on the bill as amended? Or are people ready to vote? Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, I just want to make a comment to what you said. I think what with regard to the reluctance of people to participate in these sorts of things. And my thought is, and I don't know if we can, what role we can play, but we hear in the larger culture, and occasionally we hear in the legislature, what feels to me to be a magnified concern about health related data. And it really surprises me as a newcomer, because I agree with Representative Zerwas. This information is just critical to the future of the health of Minnesota. And as I responded to some of my constituents on this issue specifically, I've just said that I want my kids to have this data. I want my, that just makes good sense. And I think whatever, I guess what I'm suggesting is that we can maybe play a role in toning down that concern and speaking more rationally about it, and hopefully influence the larger culture too. But I think that's what's contributing to it. So that's my final thought on that. I just wanted to say that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Are there other comments, members? Representative Mack?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess just two things. One, I agree with you, Representative Clark. I think a lot of the informing parents, I think sometimes when members on our side are confirmed about the, you know, the opt-out, opt-in issue, I think it sounds like it's, you know, we don't want to scare people and inform, but I think it's power too for those parents to have information in terms of, like, we had the testifier who their child passed and they didn't even know the blood was being stored. And I know there's a lot of moms and dads, they just don't even, there was maybe a piece of paper on their desk in their hospital room, but they don't even know that this is anywhere in the state to be accessed. And so I think that, you know, you say what can we as legislators do? I think part of it is partner in a stronger way with the Department of Health, and the responsibility of the Department of Health is to educate parents, whether it's in the OBGYN's office, throughout the pregnancy, things we talked about when we heard this bill. I think that's probably one of the key ways we as legislators can kind of turn up the heat a little bit on that. And so we can talk about that. And with that, thank you, Madam Chair, for a great hearing and a bill that I think we can all really rally around with very few and very little controversy and few points that we probably disagree on here and there, but it's nice to have a great piece of policy moving forward. So thank you, Madam
you.
Chair.
And I appreciate that. I really appreciate how much all members have really contributed through this 4-week very intensive process. I think when we look at this bill and how many bills we've heard and how many amendments we've heard and how many issues we've discussed, really, I'm very proud of this committee, and I'm very grateful to all of you for your time and attention. We will be meeting next week. As you know, we've got other bills that made first deadline in the Senate, so we're still going to be taking up bills next week. So we're not saying farewell yet for this committee. But I would like to renew my motion that House File 2402, as amended, be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. The motion prevails. And we are adjourned.